the download from Roseanne, Chicago's Lisey Goranson, the new CEO of 1871, Betsy Ziegler, and live music in Studio 435 from The Boy, Illinois. And now, here's your host, a man who is making popcorn and sitting down to watch tonight's attack ads, Justin Kaufman. Who's the man? Who's the man?
Those attack ads are getting exciting. Ro was right. Tonight's the night. This is the beg and plead. The last moments of the primary election. That's okay. We'll have plenty tonight for you as well. If I were a candidate, I would just throw your hat in the ring right at the last minute, right? Just throw a ton of ads up today. Just start dishing on any candidate you can from any race. Doesn't matter anymore. You can be talking about a different race. You could be in the assessor's race talking about Secretary of State. What has Jesse White done lately? Vote for me for assessor. What? What's happening here? It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got an outstanding show lined up. Primary edition of Touche coming up. Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy will join us. Give them a chance to dig into the races that are coming up tomorrow. Have you voted yet? Are you voting tomorrow? Pete, what did you vote? Did you vote yet?
I voted, yeah.
Hey, I
voted yesterday.
How was it?
It was easy peasy.
Yeah, I like to go on election day. I'm an old school like that. I like to come in and pretend like I'm doing a civic duty by grilling the voting judges. How many people have come through? Lighter than usual turnout?
Yeah.
Like I'm Phil Rogers covering it for Channel 5 or something? How's the turnout? I just like to do that. And then I bring that back anecdotally to the broadcast. Well, you know, my polling judge said only... Yeah. 24 people came through the retirement home.
There was a pretty good crowd. I have to say, a pretty good crowd for a Sunday afternoon. We went to the Whole Foods and we went shopping, and then we went voting, and then we went to the Whole Foods and we saw a lot of people doing the same thing. Huh. Like, oh, that guy was at the voting booth. Yeah,
nice sticker.
You probably didn't notice. Yeah, I was going to say you probably didn't know that I voted because I didn't post my.
Yeah,
I
you
voted,
didn't. I was waiting for that
wristband.
On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I voted. I'm special. I'm going to do that when I go get my emissions checked on my car. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to put that on there like, emissions checked. Civic duty.
Should you keep it when you vote tomorrow? Keep it. And then for any American Idol comes back, you post that.
All right. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Betsy Ziegler's taken over as the new CEO of 1871 Tech Incubator right here in the Merchandise Mart. It's amazing. When Howard Tolman was on, the outgoing CEO, he came on not too long ago. He talked about how now the tech industry makes up 13% of Chicago's economy. Isn't that crazy? When he started, it was 3%. So a 10% surge in about less than 15 years. It just goes to show you how important the tech industry and a place like 1871 is to Chicago's economy. Betsy Ziegler is now at the helm. She and Howard Tolman will be my guests at the big table tonight. We'll talk about that. Come up at 9 o'clock, Lisey Goranson from Roseanne. She played Becky. She has a long history here in Chicago, grew up in the Evanston area. She's going to be at the Chicago International Television Festival, which is tomorrow at the AMC River East. And we'll talk to her. I want to talk to her about what life was like as a child actor. She came of age. She started that program when she was 12 years old. And she had to live out her teen life as a star on the show Roseanne. When she, you remember this? She made the choice to go to college and said, and they replaced her at one point. That was big news before there was the internet. And we'll talk with Lisey Goranson about her life on the set of Roseanne as it returns to ABC coming up later in the month. Also tonight, one of the best bartenders in town, Eric Henry, will be here. How great is that? He was the head bartender at Whistler. He's now one of the partners at Sleeping Village in Avondale. We'll talk about the craft cocktail mixology craze that he helped create here in Chicago. Talk about what he sees for the future of service at bars around town. And The Boy, Illinois. Illy is back in Studio 435 tonight. Love this kid. One of my favorites has a distribution deal with Priority Records now. Last time we talked to him, it was such a great conversation here. And now he is back in Studio 435 tonight to perform live for you. How about it? That's a show. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Liam. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Come back. We'll do the carryout. So stay with us. It's The Download, 720 WGN. Let's carry out. All right, before we start tonight, you know, my just want to let you know I'm doing my fantasy baseball draft, so I'm going to try to do the carryout and my draft at the same time. But I'm a professional, so I'll handle it. I can do this. All right, let's do this. Here are today's top stories. The primary election is tomorrow for the state of the Illinois.
You are on the clock.
You know what? I got to do this real quick. This is a go ahead and pick a first baseman here. There we go. All right, sorry about that. The primary election is tomorrow in the state of Illinois.
You are on the clock.
You know what? Snake draft here. Let me go ahead and pick a shortstop. It's great. All right, good. That should be done for a little bit. The primary election is tomorrow for the state of Illinois.
You are on the clock.
That's right. I traded for that third pick. I guess I'll just take a catcher. All right. The primary election is tomorrow for the state of Illinois, and all eyes are on the gubernatorial race. A weekend poll says Pritzker and Rauner are leading, but how much still seems to be in question. One gives them 20-point leads, the other gives them 10-point leads. And frankly, what do we even care about polls, right? We should only count attack ads. If the ads are super furious and aggressive, then the candidate being attacked is closer than you think. So I guess that means that Scott Drury is going to win every race? Possible. Man, Madigan had a lot of money to spend to smear on that dude. Over and over and over and over for a candidate that doesn't even seem to be a front runner in the race for attorney general. My favorites are attack ads for really specific races that show up on your TV, even though you can't really have a say in it. Do you really want Aaron Sanderson to be the condo secretary? Vote no for the Irving Park condo secretary, paid for by Mark Hanna from condo secretary. Like, that doesn't have anything to do with it. I don't live in a condo. Tronc is in turmoil today, so they're tronked. Yeah. So first, there were layoffs on Thursday and Friday, this after they sold the LA Times. Then this morning, Robert Frieda told us all that the big CEOs are at the company are getting even richer, even though they laid off a number of employees, which is gross. Then the bombshell that the much maligned CEO Michael Farrell was abruptly retiring. And then bombshell deuce, Fortune magazine has a piece detailing past sexual misconduct harassment allegations against Farrell. So did Farrell retire because he knew this info was coming out, or did he just get out because that's what barons do? They sell stuff and lay off workers so the stock prices go higher, and then they line their pockets. Either way, sounds like a swell guy. Really sounds like a good guy. Facebook stocks are down after news that data companies took your personal data and kept it for political purposes. Really? Okay. That's what's going to get people to turn off Facebook? All right. I would have sworn it was the fake profiles, the spam, the tight-knit algorithms that mean I can't even see my mom's profile. But sure, yeah, no. Taking my likes for political purposes? Oh, that's a no-no. Over the line. Pretty sure half the people on my Facebook page are Russian spies, but I've already come to terms with that. They like all my photos of my American blue jeans. Oh, that's a very good pair of Levi. Oh, Sergey liked it. President Trump wants to give the death penalty to drug dealers. Man, they're going to give Kyle from the dorms the death penalty? That's tough. Who hasn't really wanted to be put to death when you had to hang out with him and watch skateboarding videos with him and his girlfriend? And his neighbor, Rob, who called himself Rob Noxious. Anyway, not sure where I was going with this, but yeah, Kyle's now a lawyer, so. Breaking news, President Trump just tweeted.
You are on the clock.
You know what? I got to, one more time here. I need a catcher really bad, second catcher. You know what? You can figure out what he tweeted on your own. You don't need me. You know what I need? A middle reliever. In weather, nice weekend. It's really is a feeling that that spring is near. Don't you feel that? I feel like it's trying to break through. So get ready for something to snatch it from us. You know it's going to happen. There'll be a snowstorm coming. In sports, the Loyola Ramblers are the story of the sports world after they upset both Miami and Tennessee to get to the Sweet 16. It's the first time any Chicago team has made the Sweet 16 since 2007. The Ramblers have done it on steady play from their starters and just, well, outlasting the competition. Tennessee had a chance to win after a furious comeback, but they missed. So, that's sports. So now it's all fun and games till the team takes on the Nevada and on Thursday. The coach actually told the press that they had to go back to class today and tomorrow. But that's a thing. See, this is where we're at a competitive disadvantage. Not because of the size of the school, because you know the guys from Duke, they're not really in their psych class today. The freshmen from Kansas, yeah, they're finishing up their term papers. Right. How about the team from Kentucky? Are they showing up to their basket weaving class today? Doubtful. I'd be calling it sick if I were the guys from Loyola, right? I did much less for that when I was in school. It was like 2 days ago was St. Patrick's Day and I had two beers. I don't think I can make it to class today. These guys won two NCAA tournament games. They deserve to call in sick. Nevada stunned the second seed, so the 7 and the 11 will make it to the... Oh, this is amazing. The winner of this game makes it to the Elite Eight. Wow. Loyola beats Nevada, and they probably will play a very young, uneven Kentucky team to go to the Final Four. And it's not out of the realm, man. Not out of the realm. The Lady Blue Demons lost in dramatic fashion against Texas A&M yesterday. They were up 17 points in the second half and lost on a last-second three-pointer in College Station, Texas. Is that where Texas A&M plays? Wait a second. I don't understand. The Blue Demons won the Big East, and they had to go to Texas to play Oklahoma and then Texas A&M. What's that about? Seems like the tournament really didn't want DePaul to move on there. I get it. It's different in women's basketball, and there's more home court advantage, but they won the Big East. They should at least play in Detroit or something like that. I don't know. In other sports, we're, what, 2 weeks away from baseball officially beginning? Amazing. The Cubs and White Sox are wrapping up their spring trainings. What did we learn? We learned that James Shield will start the opener for the Sox and that Ian Happ may lead off for the Cubs. Also, not sure if any of the big rookie phenoms will start in the bigs for the White Sox, whereas the Cubs are getting some amazing spring productions from their fifth starter. Also, Wrigleyville should be ready for the Cubs opener in April. Have you not seen the new area around the park? Google Earth it. You'll love it. No more yum-yum donuts. Thing of the past. Huge game in New York tonight for the Bulls. This is crunch time for a team to continue their losing ways. Right now, they're a half game worse than the Knicks. A win tonight would give the Knicks a better draft spot. So again, the Bulls need to focus, hunker down, and tank the rest of the season away. Because for all the pain and suffering from this season, to walk away with the 9th overall next year, No. At least the Bulls are taking this game seriously, as tonight, no Lauri Markkanen, no Chris Dunn, and no Zach LaVine. So at least they get it. Bulls management gets it. Should give them an award for really locking in this tank. And that's been the Downloads Tanking Report. Yeah. When's the NFL draft? April 26th. You know what? This way's away. We'll talk about that later, I guess. And finally, tonight, Alderman Riley is mad at the Chicago suburbs after St. Patrick's Day. He said that today that suburban teens use downtown Chicago as their toilet during the St. Patrick's Day festivities. And that's different than all the other years. How? If they use St. Patrick's Day as their toilet, God forbid what they use Lollapalooza and Taste of Chicago for. Ugh. Gross. That's the carry out for March 19th, 2018. Hey, we do have leftover Shamrock Shakes. They aren't as green as they were on Saturday, but you know what? Brown's Irish, too. All right, coming up, Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy give us the Illinois version of Touche. We'll break down what we... Well, we'll just argue about Illinois politics. And coming up at 8 o'clock, Betsy Ziegler and Howard Tolman from 1871. It's the Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier. How you doing, buddy?
So everybody's giddy about the Loyola Ramblers as well. We should be. Mm-hmm. But did you see the shot at the end of the first half in the Michigan State-Syracuse game?
No.
Did you see that highlight?
No.
Kid goes up for a shot. It's a three-pointer, about a second and change left to go in the half. It's blocked. It comes right back to him. While he's still in the air, he horks the shot back up and hits the three at the end of the half.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It was exciting.
Yeah.
I love this tournament. Vegas probably doesn't, yeah, but I'm loving this tournament.
You're into it.
Yeah.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right, you go left.
We go right, we go left, we go local, we go state. What is this? There's so much to talk about with Donald Trump and the FBI and everything that happened this weekend, but we promised a touche that would be about Illinois politics.
There's nothing to see in Washington, Justin. There's nothing. Firing, schmiring, Mueller, schmuller. This is nothing. What's really hot is Illinois, baby.
You guys have been both covering the national scene, of course, but also the local. You guys are always have been involved with local politics here. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy. Tonight, we get a little handicap on what we can expect tomorrow with the election and election results. Good to see you guys. Why don't we start with the governor's race?
I'm ready to make predictions.
Oh, you're already on the prediction train.
People are going to vote tomorrow.
Well, they already voted. Beat already voted.
People are going to count the votes tomorrow.
Well,
and we're going to have winners and losers tomorrow.
And in fairness,
those are my predictions.
Chris made a prediction about Jeannie Ives before she even entered the race.
Jeannie's going to win. I'm telling you, man. Jeannie's got it going downstate. She's winning 7 out of every 10 Republican primary voters down there, give or take. This is according to my own personal polling.
Give or take.
And I want to tell you, she's going to get probably a little better than 50-50 split up in a, you know. But, and that's only because so many folks have been taken in by the lies. The damnable lies. Or as Woody Allen said, it's a sham of a travesty of a sham.
Of
and that's what we've got
a
from a mockery of a travesty of a sham.
Yes.
One of the great movies of all time. Anyway, Jeannie will win.
Chris is bananas.
Do you think that Jeannie Ives has a chance to win?
Do I think she has a chance? If turnout is really, really low in the Republican primary, and I mean really low, so all the moderates stay home or some crossover.
Moderates. What Republican party are you talking about? Moderates.
Yes, good point. There are no moderates.
In the Pat Brady loses his way to the polls?
Yes. So,
James.
If the Republican moderates take a break all you have are the crazy right wingers like Chris over here, then Jeannie Ives could
crazy.
Win. But barring some miracle, I suspect that Rauner is going to win fairly comfortably.
And let me guess who you are going to predict as the winner of the Democrat, also made before the beginning of the race.
Yeah, well, let's make that move.
Come on, Dave.
You've been involved
Belly
with
up.
J.B. Pritzker. You've been involved in his campaign.
No, I'm saying T.O. Hardeman.
Oh, you say
is going to win the.
All right,
no.
So Jake, let's make a move over to the Democrat side. This one is much more.
Well, actually, before we get off the Republicans, I just have to say, Rauner is saying things lately that's just crazy. It's like Mike Madigan is so deeply ingrained in his brain. Today he gave a press conference, and in I think 6.5 minutes he said the name Madigan 31 times.
He has no center.
They counted it. It's like Madigan has taken up a permanent luxury penthouse in Rauner's brain, and he needs an exorcism to get rid of it. It's crazy time.
And, you know, he'll be able to start on Thursday. He can go to some place like Canyon Ranch and wear a fluffy robe and slippers and walk around.
We don't need the visual, Chris.
Let me ask you. We're having fun. We're joking around. But
you can have fun.
But there was a time when you were in the studio, maybe not mine, but at a different time when Bruce Rauner was running for governor, that you were sternly behind him.
I supported the guy.
So tell me, where did it go wrong? Why are so many Republicans like yourself that are making a mockery of Rauner's re-election campaign?
Because Rauner made a sham of a mockery of an outrage of a mockery of a sham or whatever.
Of an administration.
Of his administration. Yeah. You know, I don't think that he had any. I think people don't care so much. Regular people, not like Dave and me. Regular people, like the people who are listening to us as they're driving their car right now, care about results. And they care about the state and whether or not the state is going to be sound enough so that they can keep living here when their grandchildren are here, or if their grandchildren are even going to be here. Are their kids even going to get jobs here? I think people are worried about the economic stability of the state and the fiscal stability of the state of Illinois. And Rauner seemed like a terrific guy. He said, I have no social agenda. I'm going to address all of these balance sheet income statement issues. He had the background to do it. And a lot of us were... I was neutral in the primary. I supported all four of the candidates, you know, Bill Brady, Kirk Dillard. I took them all to lunch or dinner or coffee or tea or whatever and talked to all of them, gave them ideas, whatever. And I thought, you know, Rauner could be the outsider type of guy who goes, he got down there. He had no clue what he was doing. And then he got into this crazy thing that David is alluding to, or not alluding, but mentioning this whole thing about this fixation on Madigan with no sense of how he would ever pay that off And when he never paid it off, he made Madigan look big and strong and Rauner himself look weak and puny and really naive.
Okay, well, let me ask
And that's what he did in today. I mean, that was what struck me watching him, his obsession with Madigan, literally 31 times in 6 minutes, is that he just looks weak.
Okay, but Okay. But these guys at this stage in their game, when they're running the campaign, they know they've crunched the data. Nothing is done accidentally. There is a disdain. There is a disdain for the Speaker of the House in the state of Illinois, Mike Madigan, a Democrat.
Yes,
and he's running on that disdain. He's using it against Jeannie Ives. He's using it against J.B. Pritzker. He's using it all over the place. And like you just said,
I think he used it against my mom.
Yeah, he might have. Right. But the question
against
is
his own grandfather.
You know, right. As Chris talks about how Republicans are dissatisfied. You know, a lot of some of the sounds like the dissatisfaction is that he wasn't able to move forward any of the things that he wanted to move forward because he was stymied by a Speaker of the House that does not want to change.
Well, you know, in fairness, and I have been critical of the Speaker, as Chris knows, but in fairness, I don't care whether Bonnie Smith was Speaker of the House, the things that Rauner wanted to get done were not going to get through this legislature. You had 71 Democrats, and the 71 Democrats who were strongly supportive of labor rights, for example. Well, one of the earliest meetings that Rauner had with Northside Democrats talking about labor, he walks into the meeting, and he says, okay, we've had fun here at the mansion, but now let's get down to business. First thing we all have to agree upon is that unions are killing our state, and we must destroy them in order to move forward.
What an idiot.
And that's just
I mean, I agree with that statement, but if you're going to go on that limb, you better well be, as we used to say in the tree business, crotched in someplace higher. You've got to have a safety rope and a harness.
Strategy-wise.
And he would get out there. Right. He would make these outlandish statements, or he would get into these crazy positions against Madigan and have no idea of how it was going to pay off.
Well, and had he said that the problem we have is public sector unions, there are a lot of Democrats who would have agreed with him. But by attacking all unions, he unified labor in a way that had not been done in the state in decades.
Now, this is a huge point that David is making, and someday there will be a history of the Rauner era, and I think it's going to come out in full force.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio tonight. We're doing an Illinois version of Touche. When we come back, we'll talk about the Democrat side and then go down ballot here on Touche. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy are here. Let's talk Democrat primary. J.B. Pritzker was the front runner the entire time. Daniel Biss and Chris Kennedy. Polls came out this weekend that said that Chris Kennedy jumped ahead of Daniel Biss. What do we think? And, you know, let's start with you, Dave. I mean, do you think that this is J.B.'s that he's going to win this thing?
Yes.
Where did J.B. go wrong?
No, look, I think that JB ran a smart race. It's not just the money. I told people this a year ago. If you're looking at JB just as a wallet, you're missing the bigger picture. He's a nice guy. He's a super nice guy. He's likable. He's approachable. People meet him and they're like, wait, you're a billionaire? So I think that's been really helpful. Chris Kennedy did not run a good race for most of the time. I think he's done much better the last 2 weeks. And the question is, will it be enough? And my guess is that it won't be. I think JB's going to do pretty well. I think he's going to win by a fairly decent lead. And then we go strong, unify, and take out Rauner in the fall.
What do you think of J.B. Pritzker, Chris Roebling?
Well, I mean, everybody knows I like the guy a lot, personal level. I want to say he's the most normal billionaire I know, but I also want to say he's the most abnormal billionaire I know, because he's the only billionaire I know. But he is a truly great guy. And but all screwed up on the issues and terribly liberal and insensitive to the regular person in Illinois or the regular family, because all he wants to do is say yes to Mike Madigan and send more money to the public employee unions. And that is going to cause the fiscal disaster that awaits us if you don't vote for Jeannie Ives. Did I mention voting for Jeannie Ives?
We already did the Ives thing.
I'm sorry.
But my point, I mean, let me ask you, Chris, when you have Tribune investigations that come out in the last week about offshore holdings and taxes and really painting the picture of an out-of-touch billionaire who is hiding money, does that hurt? Does that hurt a candidate like
Jamie
Pritzker?
This is what we used to call, with that guy, I forget his name, but anyway, you know, the guy who ended up being worked over by the Tribune and David Axelrod in the Senate race, Ryan, I forget, who am I talking about?
Jack Ryan.
Blair Hall.
Jack Ryan.
Oh, Jack Ryan.
Yeah. And, you know, you run for county board president, you get out all of your dirt, you get out all of your unclean laundry, and it doesn't make a big bit of difference if you're a Republican, because nobody expects you to win county board president, but you get all that stuff out, then you can come back and run for Senate nomination or something like that. All of it's old news. JB, I think, unfortunately, and this is not David's fault, but somebody did not sort of fully program the vulnerabilities and how to front them early on so that they wouldn't play any role in the final, you know, days. I think JB pulls it out, but I don't think any of us should take our eye off Chris Kennedy.
Look, it was a little challenging. And again, I don't speak on behalf of JB. I don't speak on behalf of his campaign. I work with him on the business side. That said, you know, Bruce Rauner put millions and millions of dollars into the primary race against JB to try to get rid of him because he doesn't want to face him in the fall. Because he's the only one who can't who won't let Rauner do what he wants to do, which is to define him on March 21st. So he ran against JB. The Tribune put their thumb on the scale by doing this thing, you know, 5 days before the vote.
You don't think they support Rauner, do you?
No, but they...
Over JB?
Yes, they do, absolutely,
you do?
Unquestionably.
I think the newsroom would rather see Kennedy or Biss, frankly.
Let's just say I know people who've suggested to me that the Tribune was putting their thumb on the scale.
They were not happy with Rauner at the end of the
Republican. In any event, bottom line is, you know, you got to put on the big boy pants if you're going to run for the big job, and he did, and I think he'll survive this, and we'll move forward.
Attorney General's race, you know, Pat Quinn versus Kwame Raoul and Jesse Ruiz and Nancy Rotering and Scott Drury. If you were thinking that Scott
and Sharon Drury, Fairley.
Who are these people anyway?
I mean, this is a race that you know, really pits old versus new when it comes to Democrat politics.
Yeah, I mean, this race is really interesting because the smart money was that Pat Quinn was going to do the win because everybody knew Pat Quinn, is comfortable with Pat Quinn. You know, he comes on, does his ads. You know me, I'm not a witch. Oh wait, sorry, that was an old ad in a different state. But you know me, and I think that there's a chance that it can work. The problem is that Pat Quinn lost because he was a terrible governor. And so a lot of people remember that, and they're not really that anxious to put him back in power. That said, Kwame Raoul is an ethically challenged candidate who has ethical conflicts of interest up the yin-yang and doesn't have any sensitivity to it. So it's a problem.
I'm going to be surprised if Kwame doesn't pull it out, and I think Pat Quinn would be a disaster for Illinois, although I do know the motto of his campaign is we're going to make the will of the people, the law of the land.
Oh, good God, not again.
Anyway, I also want to say this. On the Republican side, we have a fresh face, Erica Harold, who is kind of making her first and a half race. I think she may have run for a few months for Congress or something. But anyway, Erica Harold is a former Miss America, and she's an attorney from downstate. She went to Harvard Law School. She put herself through Harvard Law School. And there's another guy, Gary Grasso, out in DuPage County.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a working attorney type guy. I mean, so is Erica.
We got to get to Berrios.
And Berrios is going to win.
Well, there's...
I think Erica Harold started off strong, got weak, but has been coming back. And that's no offense to Gary. I don't, you know, I'm not...
I think Erica Harold wins. And I will say that if Kwame Raoul is the nominee, I would be fearful that she would win in the fall.
Yep.
Joe Berrios, the incumbent assessor, man, talk about a campaign for the ages. This has just been won against investigations and everything in between, up against a newcomer who's a progressive, Fritz Kagi. What do you think on this one?
Fritz Kagi is he's a terrific guy. He's, I think, got integrity all day long. He's got the brains to do a great job. And I think that he's going to probably have a tough time getting 50% plus one.
Yeah, I think that Fritz Kagi has a shot. I think he's got a decent shot. A lot of younger people are voting, and they're going to want to vote against Berrios. What was really interesting is that probably about half the ward organizations didn't include Joe Berrios in their palm cards.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I think that Kagi has a shot. Berrios is feeling confident, and I think in the end, Kagi pulls it out in a squeaker.
All right, so what race are you, the ones we haven't mentioned, Chris, which one should we be thinking about?
Congressional, there's a challenge to Adam Kinzinger downstate, and that's by a conservative. We'll see. I mean, if he is hooked on to the Jeannie Ives, I think Jeannie Ives is doing very well downstate, and if they've hooked up in that race, I think that could be a sleeper.
Keep an eye on another congressional. Bill Lipinski has not had a serious challenge, and he's got a progressive woman coming up against him, Marie Newman. I predict that Marie Newman pulls this race out.
Oh, there we go. Well, you guys will be a part of our WGN Radio broadcast.
Where can we hear that broadcast?
WGNRadio.com, as well as on the app. Tomorrow night, we will have live elections results here on WGN. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling will be a part of it. Good job tonight, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. This is Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, Lisi Goranson will be here. She is the woman who plays Becky on the show Roseanne. She grew up on television. She's back for the reboot. We'll talk. She grew up when she wasn't on Roseanne. I mean, there was a long time for her to be on that show. She lived in Evanston. She grew up and was raised here in Evanston, but spent a majority of her time as a teenager as a actor. I mean, it just as a sitcom star. And she made big headlines, if you remember, because she chose to go to college and they replaced her on the show for a year and then she came back. A lot that goes into living your life, your normal personal life in the eyes of television. So we'll talk with Lisi Goranson, be my guest coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, this past month, a successor was named to replace outgoing 1871 CEO Howard Tolman. Tolman is handing the reins of the tech incubator giant to Betsy Ziegler. Ziegler was the chief innovation officer at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. The Harvard Business School grad has worked at Kellogg for a number of years and has experience in tech, marketing, and financial services, just to name a sliver of her experience. She comes to 1871 at a time when the tech industry here in Chicago continues to thrive and challenge the coast for innovation and startup supremacy. In 2012, the tech sector just made up 3% of Chicago's economy. Today, 13%. Wow. But it's not a given. Chicago's startup community may be thriving, but according to Tolman, 7 out of 10 startups, they don't make it. What's that mean? And how do we improve those odds? And what is on the horizon for not just 1871, but tech in general? Joining me in studio, the first woman to lead 1871, the new CEO, Betsy Ziegler, and returning to the program, former CEO Howard Tolman. Betsy, Howard, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
Hi, Justin.
Good to see him. All right, so Betsy, let's get right into it. Why did you want this job, and what do you bring to this job?
Yeah, well, lots of reasons why I wanted this job. First, let me be clear that the only reason I had the opportunity to have this job is because of the work that Howard and the team have done over the last 5 years building 1871 to what it is. I think there are three real reasons that I'm most excited. The first is the opportunity to work with 500-plus entrepreneurs who are out there living their dream, trying to change the world, and being the person who can convene the group around that, those folks, and helping them be more successful and hopefully increasing the odds.
Yeah, right.
Number one. Number two, I think there's a huge opportunity to connect more with the corporates in our backyard. We've got 36, 37 Fortune 500s just in the backyard, 150 in the Midwest. Huge opportunity to connect them to these startup companies. And the third really is to have a seat at the table with the other leaders here in Chicago in defining what tech could look like here in Chicago, the state of Illinois, and of course the region.
That's amazing to think about, because as you said, Howard, and you've said it on this program, and good to go from 3% to 13% in such a short amount of time, it really does show how important the tech industry is to a city like Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the other thing that those kinds of statistics really understate is what company isn't tech-enabled. So how do you keep score? I think that that's just the purest measurement of things we would call, you know, tech companies. But you tell me a company that isn't using technology, that isn't advancing in terms of machine learning, artificial intelligence, all these things. And let me just say one other thing, which is 3 out of 10 is the percentage of success that venture capital folks have. We think our numbers at 1871 are closer to 4 or 5 out of 10 because the startups get access to mentors and education and resources and support, and also, you know, sort of permission to change, you know, to morph. And that's a big part of growing a business, you know, pivoting.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there's so much that we can get into when it comes to what makes a successful startup in Chicago. But even before, and take us, Howard, you can take us and Betsy too, before 1871, what were startups doing? I mean, they didn't have these resources. There wasn't this collected community.
Yeah, they were in the desert. And J.B. Pritzker always says that after the dot-com debacle, there was a huge, probably a decade or something, where we were wandering in the wilderness, you know. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with anything. But, you know, creating a town square, creating a home, putting together all the resources, including, by the way, 6 or 7 early-stage venture funds that are resident there. They think they died and went to heaven. You know, all day long, there's just opportunities walking up and down the halls for them. Very powerful, better probably and stronger than any city. And then I just have to say one other thing, which is that Chicago is the best place for a female entrepreneur
Absolutely.
To start her business. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge, you know, sort of tribute to the work that we've done to have gender parity among our mentors, to go out of our way to make the whole place inclusive and diverse.
Well, I mean, how do you get there? I mean, how do you make that happen? Because if you look at the nationwide stats of female-owned startups, they're lacking, lagging behind men in all areas, Silicon Valley, other places. What does Chicago do? What does 1871 do? What do you guys do that changes that?
Well, Howard can talk about the history, but I'll talk about kind of going forward. I think there's an opportunity to make different decisions, and Chicago and 1871 and Howard have proven that they're willing to make different decisions, so we can show up differently than other coasts, which I think is this massive advantage when we talk about attracting talent. Mm-hmm. So you made the comment, you know, we've grown from 3% to 13%. Can we go higher? I think, yes, of course we can go higher, because if we can create the best conditions for success for very smart, talented women, that's amazing, right? And I'm proud to be, you know,
a woman.
To be a woman. Yeah.
Well, I wonder about that because, you know, business at the end of the day, I mean, what do you have to do to make a startup community more gender parity? What is it? I mean, because at the end of the day, you still have the issues that permeate business and sexual harassment and all the other things that have kept women down when it comes to startups. So, you know, what do you do to cut through that?
Again, Betsy, you know, Betsy gets to worry about that going forward. But in terms of the history, what I would tell you is that money doesn't care who makes it, right? And you come up with good ideas, you come up with strong businesses, and everybody gets out of your way. And they don't care whether you're yellow, black, white, whatever. And that's the goal. The goal is to build strong companies. The other goal, and I said this in the podcast we did with Mayor Emanuel, to move the needle, you have to take this startup technology, these startup ideas, and you have to inject it, as Betsy said, into these big corporations. Because if we don't change the way they're doing business, we're not going to have the kind of global impact. And by the way, we're not going to make them globally competitive, and they will disappear. I mean, we have plenty of examples here of leading corporations that aren't even around anymore because they didn't stay abreast of what was going on worldwide.
So you see 1871 and some of the work that you're doing to be compatible and to be complementary in a way to help big corporations adapt and stay relevant in a world where other companies that are their competition are miles ahead when it comes to technology.
They all come and say the same thing, which is they can't hire these young, talented people. The guys and girls who built it won't break it. They're not inventing enough new ideas internally. They have to do things in months. They're doing them in years now, and these things age out before they're even relevant. All of those things we hear daily, and we're building systems. And again, you know, we're building innovation days and strategies to help these companies, and they're desperate for this help.
Yeah. Howard Tolman and Betsy Ziegler in studio. Howard, the outgoing CEO. Betsy, the incoming CEO. Both in studio tonight at the big table. We're talking about the future of the tech industry here in Chicago. We'll take a quick break. Come back. We'll continue the conversation. So stay with us. Betsy Ziegler and Howard Tolman in studio, the outgoing CEO, the incoming CEO of 1871, the great tech incubator here in Chicago. We're talking about the tech industry here on The Download tonight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you have a comment. You know, a lot of what you were saying in the first segment had to do with connecting, connections, connectors. When you're in 1871, and at what point, and I'll start with you, Howard, but this concept of almost being a one-stop shop where you could be a startup, and it's important in the realm of 1871 to have the funds there that are going to fund the startup. There's going to be marketing services. There's going to be other talent. It really is truly a Chicago thing that you have one building that is essentially making these connections and creating a connected community.
Yeah. Well, look, there's about 1,300 of these type of incubators or, you know, co-working spaces worldwide now. But 1871 is still maybe one of the unique ones that has every aspect of an ecosystem. So just as you said, financing, mentoring, you know, honestly, you don't want to take directions from somebody who hasn't been there, you know. So the idea of having mentors and then being able to connect the startups to large corporations for pilots and investments and marketing opportunities, this is all part of the design for really from day one, having the universities there, having the schools there, all part. And I don't see that anywhere. The closest models that we've seen anywhere in the world are owned by universities. And so they get the university part, but they rarely get the business part right.
Yeah, it just blows my mind to think about it when if you break it down that way to the layman who's just like, you have a whole ecosystem of what it takes to start and maintain a business under one roof. Was that the goal of 1871? I mean, have you been over?
It was the goal of 1871, probably after the first year. The first year, I think, was just about being like a tech treehouse or the YMCA for techies or something. You know, it was more around being a community center and a little bit around the business thing. But there, at that time, there was like one venture fund. There was like maybe two universities. You know, I mean, so the thought of this fully blown thing has taken a while to develop. And part of it was because we don't take any money from the city or the state. And so you had to become a business and you had to become self-sufficient. And that's a model that, again, these places that are sort of captive of the universities, they have a safety net. You know, you know, that safety net makes them a little less aggressive, a little less sort of outgoing and entrepreneurial in their own operations.
Betsy, you mentioned corporations, and that was a big conversation point in the first segment. Just this idea that where 1871 and the tech industry in Chicago has to go is to fold into or provide support or just connect with the corporate community here. They've been different. I mean, the tech community and the corporate community haven't always talked to each other. Mm-hmm. It begs the question, and the question I have, and I'm sorry if this is an ignorant question, but do you start a business to have it be bought by a corporation, or do you start a business to build it yourself? I mean, how much of it plays out at 1871 in either category?
Well, I think if you polled a bunch of entrepreneurs, they all have different views on what success looks like for them. So some would be to run a going concern of some size. Others would hope to have a strategic acquisition, and others would hope to go public, right? I think more often than not in Chicago, we're sort of a home for strategic acquisitions, largely because of the density of these giant Fortune 500 companies here. It's sort of a talent feeding ground where these companies can pick up younger companies that help fuel their innovation and growth inside the big houses.
I guess
there's two parts to that. One is that for about a decade now, these big companies have really starved R&D. And so now they're in this frenzy of M&A. They're trying to acquire their way back into relevance, and you do that by buying startups. Mm. But I think the other interesting thing is it totally depends on where you raise your financing. Because if you take venture money, you're not going to own that business. You know, it's not going to be a family business. You have to provide in, let's say, 3 to 7 years, a return for those folks. If you want to run the corner grocery store, don't take outside money. Or if you do, take it from your family or something like that.
Did you run the risk, or is there a danger in the success of the tech industry, having success of having a XYZ corporation buy the latest, greatest tech startup? And it gets folded into their old, antiquated ways of doing business. Or like we mentioned the first, where they're maybe they're like, this is the printer, and this is where you're going to print things. Totally, and it slows it all down, sure. And then it isn't as much of a success story as it should be.
Well, you know, we have people that are sent to 1871 to live there from big corporations, and they literally say, please don't come back. You know, don't come back. If you fail, we don't want to see you. But if you succeed, don't come back either, because the corporate virus will get you, and just keep building it out there. I mean, this happened with Procter & Gamble. This has happened with a couple of companies. And that was literally the conversation. They understood that bringing it back into all the restrictions and all the regulations associated with the big company were not going to be the way to continue
building.
You can't disrupt yourself from inside yourself. I mean, there's almost no company that's ever been able to do that.
And I was going to say, do entrepreneurs, especially ones that start off and this is their baby and they want to sell, and maybe the money is good, but they know that at the end of the day that it's quite possible that this idea is going to die a slow death.
They're going to turn it over to managers and they'll go do something else, which is a perfectly acceptable thing.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, is that a success story for an entrepreneur to hand it over and managers take it and they do whatever they want and they're on to the next project?
I think what Betsy said before, it's a mark, it's an accomplishment, it's a return to your investors, and those are a lot of important things. But from a psychology standpoint, you have to go find your next thing. You know, in other words, if that's what you enjoy doing is building and growing these things, then the pressure's on you. So, yeah, it's a success, but it's sort of a bittersweet success.
Do you have to teach entrepreneurs that? I mean, do they come in knowing they're going to be serial entrepreneurs and that the idea is one that is for now and you have to think of something later? Or is that something that you have to finesse or through mentoring let them know that this is your first idea, you're going to have a second idea, you're going to have a third idea?
Well, I think that very rarely do people, their initial idea is the thing that gets built. I mean, I think that it changes a lot before it actually, you know, develops into a customer value proposition and has any market success. I think that there are some people that are serial entrepreneurs. They're born that way. You know, they are the kids, you know, drawing pictures or dancing for their neighbors and asking for money. I mean, they're, you know, five right there. Those kinds of people, right? And there are others that aren't built that way, but that doesn't mean they can't, you know, be a successful entrepreneur. But they have, you know, there's different mindsets and different paths.
When I taught at Kellogg for years, you know, I would always, I mean, there was this great, you know, can you grow them or do you have to train them? My view was, you can't make somebody an entrepreneur. It's in the genes to a certain extent, but you can make them smarter and better. I mean, I honestly think that you can polish the skills because you've got experience, you've got a lot of tools that you can help them use to be more successful. So I don't think that, you know, people are sort of grown into entrepreneurs. I think that it's something that's innate in your personality.
But everybody, I think, can grow into having an entrepreneurial mindset, which is sort of you know, this commitment to ongoing learning and openness to new ideas and challenging the status quo. I mean, you can learn how to do that inside any corporation or university or which I think goes a long way in terms of support of these younger companies.
Betsy Ziegler is the new CEO of 1871. Howard Tolman, the former CEO of 1871, both in studio. We'll take a break, and then we'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. And the question the big question I want to ponder, and we'll throw it out now, is does 1871 and these concepts that we're talking about tonight, do they replace business school as we know it? I mean, do we see a new way of teaching entrepreneurs that might be different than the brick and mortar way that we've done it in the past? You don't have to answer now. Do it.
I look back at the last time this happened, which was the .com, situation, and there was a substantial fall off in enrollment in the business schools.
All right, well, let's hold it. We'll take a break. We'll get the news and we'll come back. Howard Tolman and Betsy Ziegler in studio tonight at the Big Table. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Download here, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We're continuing our conversation at the Big Table tonight. Well, the tech giant, the incubator 1871, which just got a huge, I guess it's a, which it's not an
it's
award.
Yeah,
it's an award. It's
the
top incubator in the country.
No, in the world.
No, in the world.
In the world.
In the world, right.
I don't want to shortchange you guys. Howard Tolman, the former CEO of 1871, is here. And Betsy Ziegler, who has taken over as CEO, is here as well. The question I asked right before the break was whether or not we need business school. Both of you guys have been, I mean, you're just leading the Kellogg School of Management, the business school at Northwestern. Howard, you've taught at the school. I mean, I know that you're going to be somewhat biased in this question, but let's talk about, do you need business school when incubators are popping up to teach entrepreneurs business?
Well, first of all, I tell every entrepreneur when I get the opportunity that as opposed to going out and trying to start their business, the smartest thing they can do is go work for somebody smart in the area that they're interested in and learn. So that's part one. I mean, you don't do this sort of on-the-job training and have any high degree of success. But I think the business schools, they may need to change the nature of the education. We see that at the business schools. We see that at the law schools. Much more emphasis on an entrepreneurial mindset, as Betsy said before. They're not going away. And plus, when you're fighting fires and trying to build your business, you know, you don't have the luxury of sitting down and thinking about some of these things. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do it in business school, you'll never do it.
Yeah.
So,
Betsy?
Yeah, I would say the world is more complex than it's ever been. I mean, if you think back 18 years ago, the biggest thing we were worried about was Y2K, effectively, right? I mean, so it's a complete, you know, Facebook didn't exist, iPhones didn't exist, right? Totally much more complex. So if anything, we need more education now than less. I think to Howard's point, business schools are starting to adapt their curriculum to be more experiential and to meet the needs of the students coming in. And many more of them want to start businesses when they leave than they did, you know, 5-10 years ago.
I think the other big change is in the last, and Kellogg is absolutely a leader in this. Everything is done in teams. Everything is done with an emphasis on teams. And frankly, that's a lesson that entrepreneurs have to learn, which is you have to make room for all kinds of people if you want to be successful. They can't all look like you. They can't all be crazy lunatics. You have to make room for people, and you have to accommodate the team because nobody does anything by themselves anymore.
Is that something that is a newer concept in business?
I think, well, first of all, it's definitely a newer concept in entrepreneurship that everybody thinks of entrepreneurs as the Lone Ranger, and that's just not the case anymore. I mean, this is, by the way, this is the exact situation of Steve Jobs, now Tim Cook, the exact situation of Gates, and now, you know, I mean, all of the successors are absolutely people more about the team, more about management, less about, you know, I'm going to go climb the mountain all by myself. In the business schools, I think Kellogg was one of the one or two schools that were the earliest, the absolute earliest at the team methodology. And by the way, the team methodology, they still haven't adopted it in the law schools. And the law schools are still about crazy gunslingers where, mm-hmm. you know, everything is competitive and you have to beat the other guy. And it's crazy. It's just not a productive way. Because law firms are the same thing. I mean, to handle these big, complicated cases, you're as much a team manager as you are some great, you know, in-court litigator. I mean, the Perry Mason thing is just all over.
Yeah. You know, doing the segment, the Download in Chicago Business, I'll have CEOs in here all the time, mm-hmm. and they talk about the biggest challenge. I mean, overriding, 90% of is acquiring talent, mm-hmm. finding the right people. And they say Chicago has a, not a talent drain, but the way that right now there's just so much need for it. When you talk about it being a team game now, where people have to really think of entrepreneurship as being a team, you can understand why there is a drain. And how do you get these teammates to come in? I mean, that becomes part of the problem, right?
This is something which I think, you know, we have to start figuring out how to change the conversation, because frankly, a lot of this is this angst about people leaving the University of Illinois like 30 seconds after their diploma is dry and going to the West Coast. I think that's the greatest thing in the world, because no startup wants to hire one of those people because you don't want to train them. What we're seeing is the boomerang, which couldn't be more exciting. That's people 3 to 8 years who figured out they'll never own a home in California. They'll never own a home in New York. They're coming back to where they grew up, where they went to school, and they are great employees because they had 2 or 3 years of Google training or Amazon or Microsoft training, and they're the best hires you could possibly get.
You know, I think about that, the concept of talent, retaining talent, and you talk about the boomerang effect. What else has to go into that, Betsy, as you look forward to a strong run as CEO at 1871, mm-hmm. when you have to when this town has to retain talent, and not only retain but attract, mm-hmm. you know, as you're talking about the boomerang, and do people need to make the choice to leave San Francisco or leave Seattle to come to Chicago? How do you do that? How do you see your role as CEO at 1871 attracting them here?
Yep. Well, I think there are a couple things, and I'll talk more about attracting the entrepreneurs to that space than I will the talent in other corporations, yeah. for se. There's about 130 other co-working incubator accelerator locations in Chicago. 1871 is by far the biggest and has the largest scale and scope, but you can't take your foot off the gas at all because they're coming in wanting more access to different mentors with access to different technology, blockchain, AR, VR, MR, deeper insights on artificial intelligence, machine learning, right? We have to continue to upskill ourselves to make sure that we're meeting their needs as they start to build these companies. And so it's just an ongoing effort. And then back to something we talked about earlier, continue to be the matchmaker between them and companies. And if you can do that at scale, which 1871 can, I mean, that is hard to pass up.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the big thing. If you're able to match up with corporate America or corporate Chicago in a way that no other incubator can, then you have a leg up.
I'd say that's half, and I think the other half is what the culture and the environment is that you've built. And I'll tell you why, and that's because people want basically three things. And 1871, it's very clear that you learn laterally, which means you learn from everybody around you and you see technologies jump from industry to industry. But when I'm talking to somebody and pitching them on coming into 1871, we say three things. One, people want to work with other smart people. Two, they want to work on hard problems. Three, they want to make a difference. That's it. This is the place. This is where those things matter, where the best of the best are there building the businesses, and you want to be a part of that.
You know, when we talk about the tech industries around the country, does Chicago need a hit? Not unlike I put it in the form of music or other forms. I mean,
you meant like a murderer or something.
No, right. You're such a Chicagoan. No, do you need a hit? I mean, you think about Silicon Valley has, Facebook and Uber and places that they go, oh, right away, this town has made these giant companies. Chicago has great companies here that have been incubated through 1871 and other places. But do you need a hit for the talent and for the world, or like the business world, to recognize Chicago as a leader in this area?
That hasn't been my feeling. I mean, I don't think you need one. I mean, we don't take moonshots, so it's unlikely that we will create a multi-billion-dollar, hit out of nothing. But my goal has always been to create, dozens and hundreds of companies that can be folded into these bigger companies and that spread the success, because one giant hit, the history has been anybody who gets that kind of traction leaves the city. Okay, so that's a different issue. But having a bunch of companies that can bolster what our big corporate partners are doing, I think, is a good strategy for us. And by the way, this is the history of Israel, too, which is the absolute engine for startups. Almost the first 15 or 20 years of the history of Israel's, tech revolution, no company was ever $1 billion. And the reason was there's 35 different U.S. companies with research arms over there. Every time they got to about 100 million, they got picked off by one of those companies. And the entrepreneurs didn't care. They were like, okay, I'll just start another one. And so that's what built the whole culture there. Now you've had Mobileye, you've had a couple of acquisitions at scale. But you know what? They didn't care because they were generating hundreds of these companies.
A culture plays a big role in entrepreneurship, and we were talking a little bit earlier about money doesn't see color or gender. Mm-hmm. But one of the issues, and we're kind of seeing it play out today in the news, with sexual harassment, sexual misconduct allegations, and this idea that the venture capitalists or people who are investors, and they have a lot of money, mostly men, and that's a big problem in the investing community where it's mostly men, that female startups will go and say, I have this opportunity. This man isn't interested in my work, and I'm going to get funded. And then he says, well, why don't you meet me over at this, my place, and we'll drink some wine over it. And it becomes less about business and more about personal. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a classic case of sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that in your industry? That seems to be the pervasive culture, the problem that hasn't been solved. We've seen it on the West Coast. I mean, Silicon Valley has gone through this. I mean, before anyone was talking about Me Too, the sexual misconduct allegations and harassment allegations out of Silicon Valley were through the roof. So how do you deal with it when you have men who are mostly in charge of the money and female startups who are looking for that venture capital?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll talk about my perspective, and then Howard can share some of the history of choices made at 1871. But I think it's very explicit expectations of behavior inside this culture that Howard has been referring to, right, and how those groups interact. There's been extreme investment in diversity and inclusion training. I think all of the member companies at 1871 have to go through inclusion training, mm-hmm. which helps. I think if you're a female entrepreneur, we put a lot of other female leaders who have been there, done that in front of you to build confidence and help you learn from mistakes that have been made in the past and give you sort of the, you know, the phone a friend access to get objective, supportive help. Thankfully, I think the behavior is less so in the Midwest, whether that's a values thing about the Midwest or something else, don't know. But it has to be an ongoing conversation. We've got to air the stuff that's happened so we can learn from it and, you know, continue to invest.
And, you know, we're working right now with Dory McWhorter from the YWCA to develop a program. The Y here in Chicago is the biggest provider, I think, in the country of sexual harassment training. All the companies at 1871 are going to be going through it, all of our teams. But, you know, you said before it's a problem for our industry. The money part is not our industry. Our industry, our culture is the entrepreneurs and everything else. The money is a thing. It's fuel, you know, but...
But you have to deal with it.
But, you know, we've done everything from mechanically saying we don't ever want to see a panel with just five white guys, you know, to there's, you know, it doesn't happen. The trick is it doesn't happen by itself. It has to be a conscious effort. And, you know, you have to sort of go overboard in order to bring it back to some equilibrium. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a pretty healthy environment. I can tell you that in 5 years we've had almost none. And it's astonishing in a culture that's like this. But people also don't understand one other thing that I think is really important. 1871 isn't all complexion challenged 15-year-old guys, right? We have serial entrepreneurs. We have a lot of gray hair. We have career changers. We have people in their 50s and 60s. And, you know, that provides a sense of adult supervision. Also, it's astonishing when you see two young guys working with a guy who's 50. It's hard to know who's more excited about what they're building. But it's a more mature place. It's not like the Wild West. And I think on the West Coast, the inmates are still running the asylum in a lot of cases.
My last question just really is about how this going from 3% to 13% to be part of Chicago's economy. Betsy, as you take over and you look to grow that number, is it harder to do so because now the stakes get a little higher when you have 13% of Chicago's economy tied up in what's happening in the tech industry? Is it harder to take risks? Is it harder to change things? Is it harder to get... to mess with things that might see that swing one way or the other?
Yep. I don't have a target in my head of what I think that number could be, but I don't think it's going to be harder. I think Howard made the comment earlier in the conversation that every company is basically a tech-enabled company right now. So the expectation that there's going to be more of this and more development and more more problems being solved via tech is just going to rise, and hopefully that translates into more jobs for people here in Chicago.
Yeah. Betsy Ziegler is the new CEO of 1871. The former CEO Howard Tolman. Are you sad that the transition has been made?
Well, we're still in the process. Betsy starts April 2nd. I'm not sad. I'm excited. And I'm excited to be a part of setting her up for success going forward.
There you go. Howard Tolman, Betsy Ziegler from 1871. Thanks so much for joining me tonight at the Big Table. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow night, live election returns analysis. Hot takes. We're going to be on tomorrow. We got a huge show lined up at WGNradio.com and the WGN app. We're going to stream it. The Blackhawks are on tomorrow night. So the 720, which if you're listening to 720 now, we'll have the Blackhawks. If you're into the hockey game, go for it. If you want the election returns type show, just go to the computer. WGNRadio.com or your phone, the app, whatever you do, how you usually listen. There'll be a link there for us. We're going to do a show. We got so many great people coming through here tomorrow. Eric Zorn will be here, Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, Amara Enya, Lauren Cohn, Mike Fouché will be here. He'll be co-hosting. There's just going to be a lot of the people that you usually listen to here on the download coming through, as well as interviews with all the candidates. Rob Martyr will be here. There's a lot going on tomorrow. It's a primary. I'm very excited to be in a position where I get to sit in this chair and read the results of an election that started 14 years ago. Doesn't it feel like it? It's and this is just the primary. I mean, there's still a general to happen. So we started this. I feel like this all started this time last year, is at least. But we will come to the conclusion, at least in the primary, sans any recall or revote. So anyway, we will have that at WGNRadio.com with a lot of great guests who will be here. Hermine Hartman, Walter Jacobson, Heather Sharone and A.D. Quigg. Got a lot of great people coming through here. I'm so excited. Carol Felsenthal. It's going to be an awesome lineup tomorrow of great fun and expert analysis as we get the live returns of Election Night Primary 2018. All right, coming up, Lisi Goranson, Eric Henry, and the boy Illinois. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the 54th Chicago International Television Festival hits town tomorrow. It runs through the 22nd. The festival celebrates outstanding television productions and commercials. It's the television wing of the famed Chicago International Film Festival, which happens in the fall. This year, the festival will be honoring six different television programs, web series, and commercials, and many of the main stars of these projects will be in town. And that includes the big premiere of the reboot of Roseanne, which is going to be tomorrow night at the AMC River East on Illinois, right here in Streeterville, right around the corner. On hand will be executive producer Bruce Helford, as well as my guest tonight, actress Lisi Goranson. Goranson played Becky on the show for the better part of the run, and she's returning in the same role for the new Roseanne, which is airing on ABC starting on March 27th. Lisi Goranson grew up in the Chicago area, got the part of Becky at a young age. Since that time, she's enjoyed a career in television and film, and she is back with most of the original cast and crew for the reboot, and she is in studio tonight. Lisi, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be home.
It is home. It is a home. How often do you get back to Chicago?
As much as humanly possible, but I'd say like every 2 to 3 months. Maybe it's a little more during baseball season.
You're a Cubs fan, of course.
Indeed.
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, obviously we'll get into the reboot of Roseanne, but for you, whenever I mention that Lisi Goranson's going to be on the show, somebody, I don't know whether it's social media, whether someone goes, I know Lisi, I know her family, Evanston, what have you. You have such deep roots here in Chicago and people remember that. How do you keep it with you? How do you keep the fact that you came up through Chicago, through Evanston as an actress with you when you have success in Hollywood?
Well, I just feel like I'm so lucky to have the upbringing that I have had. And my friends are friends from childhood still. My best friend who I saw last night, we met when we were 2 years old on the playground. And 20 years later, we're still friends. No, I'm older than that. But I don't know. There's just something about the people in Chicago that are so genuine. And I just feel like a sense of trust that I maybe don't have in other aspects of my life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I just think that there's a sense of integrity with people here, and also just people don't really take themselves too seriously too. And I just love being here. I really do. You know, both my parents are Midwesterners. My mom grew up in Gary and my dad grew up in Moline, Illinois. You know, my grandmother waitressed at the Drake. And so it just, you know, you feel that history in your life, I think. And I feel it when I come back. I feel like it's part of my legacy.
The story that tells of you at a young age really getting Roseanne on second audition, third audition, and starting your career at such a young age acting in Chicago. What were you doing before the audition? How old were you?
I was 12.
Yeah, right. So what were you doing? Were you doing shows in Chicago? Were you starting a career in acting?
Well, I was in the school play at Haven. I was playing Baba Yaga, the witch. But I was studying at Piven Theater Workshop in Evanston, which was a couple blocks from my home. And I was a dancer. You know, there was this place in Evanston called Noise Cultural Arts Center where they have dancing and they have art and et cetera. And I was dancing there and Piven was right down the hallway. And so I just love performing. And then when I started studying at Piven, I just completely lit up. I mean, I just felt totally aligned with what they do and their work. And I'm actually hosting their gala in May. So everyone go to that. I really, you know, my parents were working and we had no interest in me doing anything professionally. I wasn't really auditioning, but Piven was affiliated with an agency in Chicago. And they just said, why don't you go for an open call? And so Roseanne was my second open call.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And then so I was sitting in Evanston and we were eating Chinese food and I opened a fortune cookie and it said, you will be graced with the presence of stardom. And then the phone rang and they said, we want Lisi to come to L.A. for the final callback.
Oh, at 12 years old, take us back to that. I mean, because what was your thought? I mean, your life would change, obviously. Were you thinking at 12 years old about what was going to change? What was ahead of you?
Well, I thought there was no way I would ever get it. You know, it was just too much of a fluke. So I was more excited about just going to California and like having a free trip with my mom. And, you know, I think we went to the mall. I mean, it really didn't register until, you know, they said, Lisi, stay, and had the other girls leave. We were on this lot at Universal Studios. And so I'm there. And then I auditioned with all the Darlenes and all the DJs. And then we all went to the network and we auditioned for, you know, the head honchos. And then they came out and they said, you got it. And I remember Sarah Gilbert jumping up and down and screaming and saying, oh my gosh, do you know what this means? And I just looked over at my mom and we were both just completely frozen. Because to me, it was like, I had this really great life here. And the fact that there was something that was going to interrupt that was very powerful for me. It wasn't just yippee-yay.
Yeah, right.
It was like I was in the play. I was on the soccer team. I had my buddies. I had my summer camp, Camp Echo, that I went to every summer, which I still did. But and my parents said, I don't think you should do this. I don't think this is a good idea. And I said, this is happening for a reason. It's just too much of a fluke. So what if we never know why this is happening? There must be some higher purpose. Yeah. And that's really kind of what happened. It's so unconventional now that as I get older and I see young actors and the way their parents push. And it kind of breaks my heart because I think that what they might not have is what I had, which is this depth of experience and friendship and community in Evanston and in Chicago.
Yeah. Lisi Goranson's my guest tonight. She plays Becky on the show Roseanne, which is back. It'll be starting March 27th, 7 o'clock Central. It is also going to sneak peek coming up here tomorrow as part of the 54th Chicago International Television Festival. The sneak peek, which Lisi will be at, is going to be at the AMC River East on Illinois. You can get tickets at the Film Festival website. Lisi Goranson in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Lisi Goranson, grew up in the Chicago area in Evanston, and she also, of course, played Becky on the hit show Roseanne, which is coming back to ABC starting on March 27th. Sneak peek as part of the 54th Chicago International Television Festival is tomorrow night at AMC River East on Illinois Street. Tickets still available. All right. It's amazing to hear you talk about memories and what you thought, and also the reflections of understanding what other childhood actors might have to go through. Let's skip to being right in the middle of it. This show proved itself not just to be a sitcom with a stand-up comedian, but one that was had cultural value in the way that it changed a lot of the way that we acted and who we were as a country. There's so much that went into the show Roseanne. When you're right in the middle of it, when you're season five, season six, do you recognize that? Do you recognize how much this show is successful and how it's pushing boundaries?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we had some pretty good buzz before we premiered initially. And when we did, it was just, you just felt like it was an overnight success. I mean, we had these great ratings and people just took to it. And, you know, that being said, we had a really high viewership, but it's also very complicated. You know, I think Roseanne herself is a very provocative person. She's a comic. And, you know, the fact that the show was so raw and it really depicted real people and mm-hmm. it depicted working class people, you know, I think for some people that was very challenging. I think also having a strong female protagonist who wasn't a glamour gal and who wasn't always sweet was threatening to people. And so it wasn't just great, you know, it also rubbed some people the wrong way. But I think that's part of its power too. And it also, that's how people break ground, is in that
yeah,
way.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's just one thing that's really amazing is just to hear, and especially because of the revival, you know, I hear a lot of fans talking to me and saying just how the times when they were watching with their families and that it was just like a mirror and really helped them process things that were going on in their own family.
What I always, I find interesting is that this was an adult show and you were a kid. You know, you had to grow up as a teenager on this program. And as much as it was family oriented and a working class family, there were adult themes and took on very sophisticated writing. And that's what made the show great. There's some people who might go into their first acting gig and they might get a Nickelodeon show. And they might be something that's geared for 10-year-olds. This was not. Did you think that changed the way you saw the profession and saw acting, that you were surrounded by all these adult themes, even though you're working on a working class family show?
I don't know. I feel like I've always been kind of an old soul. And part of being a Midwesterner is having a work ethic. And so I feel like I really took my work very seriously even back then, but it's also a comedy. So the atmosphere was very festive and fun as well. But, you know, one thing about revisiting the show again is that I really have an appreciation for my former self, because it is such hard work. It really, really is a challenge. The script changes every single day. My theater brain is used to memorizing stuff over 3 weeks. And then this is, you memorize something and then it just slips through your fingers and it's a new, totally new script, totally new scene, totally new lines. And I just said, wow, I did this as a kid. I really appreciate that, you know. And another aspect too is that a lot of the crew came back from back when. And, you know, they kind of, I just felt their love again. I felt that the way that they nurtured me, and that they appreciated me and they respected and loved me. And I felt that again. And I just felt, it reminded me, because it was also, you know, at times a very difficult atmosphere because, you know, there was a lot of money in the show and it was high pressure. But I feel like I was surrounded by some really, really great people who nurtured things in me.
And
you know?
People don't recognize that part of it, of course, that, you know, with the atmosphere that the show does a great job of portraying and the whimsical nature of the comics, especially Roseanne being at the front, that there was a lot of pressure around the show. And this was one of the big hits of the 80s and 90s in the way that everybody was banking on this show and the people that were on it. One of the instances, and everybody, you know, who watched the show knows about you wanting to go to college. As Lisa, you needed to go as a 17-year-old. You said, you know, at some point I need to go to college, and the script had to move around, and at one point you were replaced. Talk about that experience, having to play out in entertainment. So many high school kids get the opportunity to just go to college, and in your case, if you wanted to go to college, it was on the front page of Variety.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very unpopular decision. I mean, I think now people understand it, but then a lot of people thought I was crazy to pass up, you know, the money and the career stuff and whatever. And, you know, in a way, I had put a good 5 years of my life, of my childhood, into the show by then, by that point. And I felt like, you know, when I left Evanston, I never left Evanston. I always went back. But I felt like there was all these different aspects of myself that were put on hold, you know, academically, you know, part of me is athletic. I played rugby in college. I wanted to play. I was a dancer. All these things had to be put on hold because I had a full-time job school. Right. And I just wanted to, I think for me, being an actor is also being a well-rounded person. Because if, you know, you play an academic, what do you do? If you play, you know, the more aspects of yourself that you nurture, the more roles that you can play.
And the more life experience you can play off of.
Exactly.
Right, right.
And that's really what I was missing and I was craving. And I, you know, my mom calls me a professional friend. I love my friends. And, you know, that's something that I'm proud of. But I really didn't have time. I mean, it really was hard for my friends. Not just the fact that I was gone, but the fact that what fame did to my life. You know, what they saw, the fact that I didn't have privacy anymore. And it's a very different culture now with social media.
Right,
everything's
right.
So different than it was in the 90s. But, you know, when the paparazzi started coming around set and when they started chasing me home and, you know, that was just not really what I bargained for. It was really scary. You know, it felt like sometimes it felt really threatening. And I just didn't want to live that way. I mean, I still don't, but I kind of am awed by actors that really embrace celebrity in that way, because to me, it's really scary.
Yeah.
And there's no real good way to handle someone, a stranger that wants to monopolize your time. You want to be polite, but then sometimes you just want to be in your own world and not kind of be, I don't know, accosted
or just publicly shared in that way.
Shared, right.
It might be
exactly.
You know, my last question for you, just as you get back on the set, and here comes Roseanne again in the second round. Here we go. March 27th is roaring up at the International Television Festival here. You're on the circuit. And when you look back and you look at your life, how did Roseanne change it? I don't mean the person, but the show. How did that experience make who Lisi is today?
It's funny. I've been thinking about that a lot. I mean, aside from just financially giving me a boost in life and also giving me opportunities as an actor, one thing that's really profound about it is I think that when I first got the show, you know, what was on television was so different from Roseanne. I actually had kind of a bias against, I think, being in a family of poor people who are working class or who are struggling financially. I felt like part of my ego was uncomfortable with that as a kid. I guess in my fantasy, I wanted to be like a wealthy princess or something like that, and not like a blue collar princess, which is what I was. But I feel like the way that it depicts the working class in America is something that is incredibly powerful, incredibly important. And I think, you know, what we saw, at least in the election, and what often happens in our country, is that that populace is overlooked. They don't have a voice. They don't have advocacy. And to me, that, you know, I could say that it was a lesson in myself, but it's also something that I'm very proud of about the show. And I'm, and in its return, it really, it's still very much about that. And yeah.
Lisi Goranson returns as Becky on the show Roseanne, which will be on ABC starting March 27th. She's going to be at the 54th Chicago International Television Festival, which starts tomorrow, runs through the 22nd. She will be there tomorrow for the sneak peek of Roseanne. She'll be there along with executive producer Bruce Helford. It's at the AMC River East right here in Streeterville. Lisi, pleasure to meet you, and thanks for sharing your story with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Go Cubs!
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, it's time for Industry Night, our weekly segment exploring the world of food and hospitality. A new beer and cider bar has opened up in Avondale. It's called Sleeping Village, and it'll feature several craft beers. Plus, it's got a stage for music. Sounds nice enough, as bars and clubs open up all the time in this great city. But this is the new project from the guys behind the famed Whistler in Logan Square. The Whistler is considered one of the best cocktail bars in the city, and it's routinely hard to get into. It opened almost a decade ago in Logan Square, so it's only natural that the follow-up project is here, and Sleeping Village is it. But instead of slinging craft cocktails, the crew of Billy Helmkamp, Rob Brenner, and the original Whistler bartender Eric Henry are putting an emphasis on beer. And as I mentioned, Eric Henry was the bartender at Whistler, and now he moves to Sleeping Village as a partner. Henry and his team were at the epicenter of the cocktail movement here in town, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the Download tonight. Eric Henry, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.
Great to have you. I mean, let's talk about this. I mean, this is an exciting, not just for Chicago, but for you, the fact that, you know, you get a chance to move on from being a guy who's the head bartender and setting what's on the menu to being a partner. Talk about why you're involved in Sleeping Village.
Well, over the years of working at the Whistler, Rob and Billy and myself really connected around mostly our love for music and generally just our love for running a venue and throwing shows and basically throwing parties. So we had a blast doing that for 10 years, and we just wanted to make something bigger, more accessible, faster service, everything like that.
Yeah, so. I was going to say this. I mean, really, there's an emphasis on, we'll talk about the beer and the cider part, but there's really, I should say, the emphasis is on music. You guys are really getting into the game of presenting music and making it a bigger play than at the Whistler. You had the back little stage, but this is right on par with some of the clubs in town.
Yeah, well, we had a great thing going at the Whistler, still do. It's a small room, very intimate for shows. The new place, we have a separate room for shows, and then the front half is the bar, which we've sort of designed around the concept of like a neighborhood bar. So we're open all day serving coffee, little snacks, and then beer and cider, of course. That's my side of the game. And then the venue is in the back where we throw shows at night and do a bar in the back as well, yeah, with cans.
You are known, and I kind of mentioned it at the top, for craft cocktails, but really at the height of it, the Whistler's been at the center. Why beer? What is it about craft beer? And what's your experience in it? Obviously, as a head bartender, you know all about it, but you have made your name in cocktails.
It's kind of a long story, but we did the cocktail game for a long time. We love it. I mean, personally, I started to run into dead ends with coming up with new drinks. My creativity was limited by my background, which is basically a bartender, not a super well-curated chef or anything like that. I didn't have a big background in cooking. But over the years of making drinks and being really successful with that, I was able to learn a lot and practice a lot about drinking beer. And I go into it with the perspective of a cocktail bartender, where I want to offer the widest range of things I possibly can and get them into the hands of people who may not have had them before. Same thing we did with cocktail ingredients. We're doing now with different beers from around the world that people don't necessarily know about. They haven't heard of them. They just don't have the exposure that a lot of like local beers might have. Mm-hmm. So we're bringing in beers from all over the place, just as at the Whistler, we were able to do that with cocktails. Like all those kinds of esoteric ingredients, the same, if not even a larger world like that exists in the beer world.
As a bartender, and it's fascinating to me because there's so much put into what a bartender knows. Now there are programs, you know, you go to the cooking schools and there's programs for mixology or what have you. For you to be a bartender who knows the work and knows the ingredients and to be able to have that experience almost be a DIY experience in the way that you're moving through and understanding how these cocktails come out and have so much success with it. Talk about this idea of you almost learning on the fly.
That's a little bit of a romantic take on how I learned how to bartend. I mean, it took a lot of work. It took a lot of self-study. I had a great mentor in Paul McGee for the first couple of years that I was working at the Whistler. He's gone on to do great things, obviously. And going through that process and then taking the reins myself and sort of directing the program the way I wanted it to go in conjunction with Rob and Billy, like we kept everything fresh and new that way instead of having like a singular vision, where a lot of bars I feel fall into that trap where there's one guy or gal who's the head bartender and they sort of direct the program down one certain road or the other.
Right.
At the Whistler, we always did it by committee.
Okay.
So we created all of our drinks by committee. We're doing the same thing at the new place, doing the beer list. Like, I'm the beverage director, but I have a partner who's also a co-director, and Rob and Billy have their input, and we take input from the entire team. So we're just trying to get as many opinions as we can to have our program be the most interesting and most varied in the city.
If somebody listens to this and says, you know, I'm a bartender and I want to elevate my game or possibly get into the field altogether, when you talk about having a mentor but also being a self-study, what goes into that? Tell me about what makes a good bartender, especially one that's going to be in the high-profile spot of a place like the Whistler.
Sure. The most important aspect of learning how to bartend and be a mixologist or a cocktail bartender for me was curiosity. I came into the Whistler pretty much totally clueless. I'm not even going to lie. I was the door guy. I was then the bar back, and I worked my way up through the system there. And I had never seen 95% of the ingredients that were there. Chartreuse, never heard of it. Averna, never heard of it. Like, none of these things that really? I even knew what they were.
Wow.
So I just started talking to Paul, buying books, reading blogs, going to bars, going to cocktail places. Every time I traveled with my wife, I'm dragging her around a cocktail bar. She's like, why are we going to so many bars? You know, like, we were in Paris. She's like, can we do something else? But that curiosity is what really drove me to continue in this line of work. I mean, honestly, I was in kitchens for most of my life working. Never really took it that seriously. But once I got into the Whistler and got behind the bar and learned, hey, man, you can make this into a career. You can make it really fun. You can do music and have music involved in it. That's when I really focused my curiosity towards the beverage world. And moving from cocktails like to beer is just another one of those, like, I kind of did the cocktail thing. Now I'm super curious about beer. I've been like kind of getting into wine a little bit more.
I was going to say, and it really does feel like, you know, the follow-up question about how you discover the right beers for the menu. Let's do this. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about that part. Eric Henry, my guest, the former head bartender at the Whistler, who is now a partner and beverage director at Sleeping Village in Avondale, the new bar that just opened up about a month ago. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Eric Henry here in Industry Night. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coppins, our Industry Night segment. Eric Henry is here, bartender, head bartender at the famed Whistler for years, has moved on as partner and beverage director at Sleeping Village. The same guys behind Whistler are now bringing the Sleeping Village, which is a craft beer and cider bar with music, a live stage, getting a lot of buzz around this place. You know, as we mentioned right before the break, we were talking about craft cocktails and how you got into it, which I love. I love the self-study of it because, to be frank, it can be a pretentious pursuit.
Sure.
In the way you walk into a bar and somebody is like, well, this goes with this, and it's intimidating. To understand that there are ways that bartenders are just like us, they're curious and they want to understand the work. How important is that when it comes to even beer, to not necessarily be the foremost expert, the trained foremost expert on beer, but more to have curiosity lead the way?
Well, there was a lot of that sort of, I don't know, pomposity around the cocktail scene at the beginning when people were just first figuring it out and everyone was really excited about their new knowledge. And as we all know, like, the newest person is generally the most, like, I know everything,
yeah, right.
The most confident about their situation. But as you grow and learn that there's just millions of ways to do almost everything, you kind of figure out, I better lay off that sort of angle on it a little bit and just focus on what's really important behind a bar is customer service. And, you know, not making your guest feel like they're not smart or not totally hip or whatever the feeling you'd get is when somebody is kind of being a little bit lording their knowledge over you,
yeah,
or
right,
whatever.
Right.
And that's the way I come at bartending, is just from a customer service standpoint, where I love to have the knowledge about beer and I'm like here to help you get whatever drink you want in your hand through my knowledge of what you like versus what I have to offer you that you would like.
I always think about Whistler's a good example because there's bartending that might be the more friendly daytime, what do you have kind of vibe where you walk in and you grab a stool and you watch a game, that kind of stuff. When you're talking about the Whistler, though, there's a line around the corner. There's definitely expectations that people have when they come in. They maybe set aside time because they know they're going to the Whistler tonight. Does it change the way as a bartender you approach the gig in the way that you know that there's all this excitement and anticipation around the experience they're going to have with you?
A little bit. It does change it to a certain degree when it's really, really cranking and busy like that. You do sort of have to adjust your mentality. That being said, it's more of like trying to offer the same service while keeping it maybe a little bit shorter. We try to give every single person through the door the same respect, the same treatment at both bars. You know, everywhere we go, it's like, we respect you as a customer, as a guest here. You're welcome in our space. We don't ever like try to change our perspective based on like, well, there's a million people in line, right. So I don't care about you. There's somebody else right behind you to take your spot. Like, that's just not the way we can go about
right,
it. Like
right,
then your lines don't come anymore.
Right, right.
So,
you know, for you to make a transition to go from head bartender to beverage director mm-hmm. and partner, how has your job changed from going from the Whistler to Sleeping Village?
Yeah, a lot less bartending, still a lot of hours, late nights, but more so working with the staff, getting them trained, working with more back-of-house stuff, like talking with distributors mm-hmm. and buyers and trying to contact breweries like, hey, who's selling your beer in Chicago? Like that kind of thing. When can we get your beer in Chicago? Pushing people to send us stuff. That was a big learning curve for me, because most of the time at the other bar, I was the beverage manager, but I was also, that role was mostly just bartending and working on cocktails.
Yeah, or even being the guy who sets the menu. It's so interesting, too, because as you said earlier in this interview, to go from door guy to up to bartender to head bartender to now beverage director to partner to having business conversations with distributors. Mm-hmm. You've lived a life when it comes to the bar.
Yeah.
And talk about that. Talk about like just the evolution of the early days of your career to where you're at now.
After college ended, I was sort of a rambler, kind of road warrior situation, just going around working in restaurants, doing seasonal work, traveling, things like that, taking months off at a time. And when I landed in Chicago, I was lucky enough to be put together with the guys at the Whistler and then finding myself in a really great position. I love music. That's always been a central part in my life. Yeah. So working at a place that did live music and was part of the nurturing the music scene here in Chicago, which I was new to at the time. Like, I moved here 6 months before the Whistler opened and started there about 6 months after they opened. And then, working through all those different spots, learning the bar industry from the bottom up, essentially.
But that has to help you, though, as how a doorman thinks. And
Yeah, it does. I don't know if I predicted my path to land where it has, but, you know, we started thinking about this new place and this new venture with a larger venue where we could do larger shows and still maintain what we love, which is just those types of community spaces, those types of bars that you can go into and you feel at home, but there's also something else going on, maybe a show, maybe artwork, mm-hmm. whatever it is. We've been working on this project for years now. Like, we started it about 5 years ago. We conceived the idea. It took us a long time to find the right space for it, a long time. And then to finally build it, it took another couple of years.
Yeah.
It was basically a project that, you know, you have a general contractor, but you're there.
You're there, right?
All the time, like, do this, do that, don't do it this way, do it that way. It was a definite learning experience for me. I'd never undertaken something so large.
With this project, and this is my last question, but just mm-hmm. I think about you've spent your professional life, and probably more than your professional life, in the bar. And that space, the bar, the tavern, that mm-hmm. hasn't changed much over time. It's the same concept of how bartenders work. And there's been modifications, obviously, mm-hmm. with the craft, you know, cocktail movement, more about it, the speed and the efficiency, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But as you look forward, now that you're moving into new roles in your professional life, can the experience of a bar be improved? Are there places that still you look at it as an entrepreneur, you look at it as someone who lived a life, say, mm-hmm. you know what, I can make a better bar?
That's our goal at all times, working at our places. And something we try to instill in our staff, which is constantly thinking about how you can do better. So we're always trying to improve our space with, be it from the guest's perspective, like making it more pleasing to the eye, making it more comfortable feeling for you. And then in the back of the house, how we can make that service quicker, how we can make everyone understand what's going on in our space without having it be difficult. So we're constantly working towards that, and like being open so far about 6 weeks and adding in little bits and pieces. Like, we started our shows last weekend. We're having a show Thursday night, and then next weekend, more shows, more people, the patio's coming. Like, these are all issues that these are all issues that we're working on day in and day out, like trying to make them more efficient, better, more fun for people to come and enjoy. Because that's, in the end, like, that's what running a place is about. It's a place for people to come together with their friends and family and enjoy themselves.
You know, it's funny because I was just in New York and we were in a cocktail bar. And the one thing they had on the menu, when you ordered the drink, the waiter said, that drink takes 14 minutes to make. Or that's what it was. Like, they had the times down on the menu. It almost was like that was, you know, almost like when you go to Cheesecake Factory. And like, if you want a souffle, you got to order it now. But it was like they were telling us the times of each drink. That was part of the menu item. I was amazed at that being an, almost an evolution when you think about they want to make sure that you know the expectation of what you're ordering.
It's a big problem in some places when you don't make those expectations clear. We found that out at the Whistler early on, and it's a little bit different with draft. Because it's pretty quick.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But, you know, you're going through, and if people are, you know, they order their drink, they don't expect to wait 5 minutes if it's really busy, or 10 minutes, or 14 minutes, as
you said.
So, yeah, write it down there. I mean, why not?
Why not?
It's, if that's how long it's going to take.
That's what it's going to take.
Let them know, and then they won't be upset.
Eric Henry is the partner and beverage director at Sleeping Village in Avondale, right on West Belmont. So what's the address?
That's 3734 West Belmont.
There you go, 3734 West Belmont. Of course, the longtime head bartender at the Whistler in Logan Square. Eric, thanks for coming in and talking about your craft tonight here on The Download. Appreciate it.
That was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's time for Studio 435, our weekly segment featuring the best live performance Chicago has to offer. Tonight, we welcome back to the Chicago hip-hop artist, The Boy Illinois. The Boy Illinois, Illy for short, is an upcoming artist that's had a dreamlike year. We had him in here about a year ago, and since that time, he's signed a distribution record or deal with Priority Records and put out a new mixtape called Windy. He's become a national figure with interviews on Sway and Forbes magazine, called the next big thing to come out of Chicago. And there's more to come. Just kept back from South by Southwest, and Illy the Boy Illinois is in studio tonight. Illy, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, what's going on, man? It's good to be here.
You just came back from South by Southwest, which you just told me in the green view. You did five shows.
Yeah, five shows.
Where does, I mean, anyone who knows the showcase, usually get one or two, but to do five, how do you get five showcase shows in South by Southwest?
Well, you know, you got to have Forbes say what they said about you, and then the phone starts ringing and the emails start coming in. So, you know, everything, it was a domino effect, you know.
Yeah.
So this year has been great for me, because I didn't go last year for South by Southwest. I was here. But this year, my presence was asked to come by down and bless it, so I came down and blessed.
You began, good thing. How was it? Was it a good time?
It was great. It was great. I really, like, I've been on tour previously for, like, under Lou for, like 2 years.
Yeah, Lupe.
So my performance skills is kind of, like, up there. You know what I'm saying? So you go down there, you kind of, like, separate yourself from all the rest of the amateurs that's kind of down there. So I went down and showed and proved. So, you know, backed up why Forbes called me the next hot thing to come out of Chicago.
You know, I have to say, that's such an interesting point. To be on tour, to open up for Lupe Fiasco, and we talked about that last time you were here.
Yeah.
But that does, I mean, that professionalism, that discipline, the fact that you're on tour, and it's not, you're not getting in a van necessarily and going from place to place. This is, the Lupe Fiasco tour is a big deal. You're there in front of big audiences. It's hard because it's also, they don't know who you are.
Yeah, and it's a different type of audience too, because it's not just a party audience, because pretty much you put anybody up there, and if it's rocking, they're going to rock with them. But this is a very inquisitive, I need to know what's going on, Lupe Fiasco audience. So you kind of want to be on point.
Right,
you want
to
be on point from A to Z. So, you know, that taught me a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That has to help you differentiate yourself.
Definitely. I mean, especially in the performances, that's a whole nother different art in itself from actually being in the studio or writing the music. It's a lot of people that are not great performers that are great songwriters, or they can make a great song, but it doesn't translate well into, you know, public display. And for me, I've been a performer since I was four years old.
Where do you think it comes from?
My dad, well, like I said, I got a video. Actually, if you go scroll down my IG, it's a video when I was a ring bearer. I think I was 4 years old. I danced the entire reception. and my dad's friend was mad at him because my dad recorded me the whole time instead of the reception. But it was cool, man. And from there, I was a natural entertainer. I just loved to dance. I just loved to act out. It's like, hey, I like making people smile. And it was just some, I guess it was like physical aerobics or something, because I just stayed active. And I guess that's how I'm so slim, because my metabolism is so high. I've been running and jogging since I was like 2-3 years old.
Well, for you, I mean, talk about that, the balance of being on stage and being a performer and getting in studio and working on the craft of creating mixtapes and EPs and albums. Talk about that balance as an artist.
For that, it's important to have that balance, because you want to have music that translates over well to be actually performed in front of a large audience. So you don't want to make a lot of boring or non-moving music in this day and age. Kind of like, we falling asleep here, man. So you want to keep in mind, like, all right, I also have to display this not only in performance, but recorded performance, because I want to do a video for it as well. Mm-hmm. So it has to translate well for both. So you gotta be conscious of that when you're writing the records, because not only is this a craft, but you're in the business for it to be a business. So you kind of compromise enough, just not as much as you usually would, but you know, it's a business, so you have to compromise a certain aspect and percentage of that, and you get what you get.
So you're thinking about it when you're writing songs about how they're going to play out on stage, how they're going to play out in the video.
Yeah, actually, one thing, I want to shout out my dad, because he probably listens, it's number one fan, but he told me, I grew up on a lot of different music, so Steely Dan is a group that I grew up on, and he was like, you know what I like about Steely Dan? They say a lot without saying a lot. And you can groove to it. So it's not a lot to process. You got to take in. You can just groove to it. And if you want to catch something later, you know, you'll catch it later because it was so easy to attain. So that's what I kind of adopted in my last project, Dusabo, when I was working with D Gangs. It was just like that whole, I want to say a lot without having to say as much as I usually do. Because, you know, I'm known for being a lyricist. So I don't want to go over people's heads as much. So it's just, and it's fun too. It's all about the packaging of the lyrics. You know, certain songs that seem like real A, B, C, D, but you'd be like, wait a minute, that has like three different meanings. There's a triple entendre here. There's a double here. So it's fun, man. It's fun. I enjoy it.
Well, we're going to hear some live music in just a second. You know, and I want to mention that you mentioned D Gaines, who's the video director, a big video director in town. And there's a lot of Chicago influence on Windy. There's a ton.
Lot. Oh, yeah.
How important is it for you? Because you are moving on. You're spending a lot of time in L.A. with Priority Records, and you're getting a chance to do other things. How important is it for you to have Chicago representation on your music?
I mean, for me, that's always been a thing, even back in the days when, like, the early blog days, because I come up during that time when people like didn't even have album artwork for songs. It was just like blogs would post people's pictures and stuff like that. It's pretty important for me. You know, I just to reap the benefits. You know what I'm saying? I've seen a lot of work. I put in a lot of work.
So, and it's important to keep Chicago represented. It's
very much so. I had a song a long time ago with my homie God Jules called Chicago White Sox. You know, I got Chicago tatted on me, you know, the White Sox. It's in everything. I live, bleed. I come from the Catholic school system. It's just a lot of stuff. Yeah. I come from a different side, too, that's kind of been exposed for the most part. So it's like the Catholic school. I grew up in the city, South Shore area, and the South suburbs. So I've seen both sides of the coin. So it's just a lot of stuff.
I was going to say, how do you think that affects your music?
It's great, because I can achieve a certain different type of balance. Because it's crazy, because you would think like the suburban part would be like, okay, you know how to operate within in and out of the corporate world. But the interesting part about that is that's not true, because I come from at a time when like a lot of the African-American parents were hitting middle class. And once they got some paper, they moved us out. They moved their kids that was in like fourth and fifth grade to the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And we basically just the bodies moved. The whole mentality, the city was still the same. It carried throughout. So it really didn't matter.
Yeah, right.
So it was more of me being in Catholic school And I've been in public school all my life, and I go to Catholic high school, and it's just like, wait a minute.
Let's do this. Let's take a break because I'm going to run out of time here. But because I want to ask, and we'll catch up on this. But your schooling, going to a Catholic school, how much what lessons do you learn? Meaning, I would think discipline. You just talked about the being on stage and professionalism and what sets you apart and entertainment, but discipline has to play a big part. Hold on, we'll get to it.
Okay, definitely.
Illy the Boy Illinois in studio tonight. His mixtape, which is out right now, called Windy. He just got back from South by Southwest. So much great stuff happening in his young career. All right, we'll do this. We'll take a quick break, and then Illy will get on the mic, and we'll do some live music here in Studio 435. So stay with us. It's the Download 720 WGN at Studio 435, our weekly segment featuring the best live performance Chicago has to offer right here in our Allstate Showcase studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. Tonight's no exception. Chicago hip-hop artist, The Boy Illinois, Illy in studio. He just signed a distribution deal with Priority Records, put out a new mixtape called Windy, just got back from South by Southwest. Forbes magazine called him the next big thing to come out of Chicago, and there is more to come. I'm telling you. Talented and great to have him back in studio tonight. The Boy Illinois, Illy, here he is with the track Sell Again. Take it away.
Real cold, real small life. Yeah. Try and get out. I'm trying to get out, I'm trying to get out, I'm trying to get out the streets. Hey, yeah, I'm trying to get out the streets. Ha, ha, ha. Look both ways, look both ways, look both ways. Hey, 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 I say quarter flipper, sack getter, back flipper, dollar stretcher, money getter, politicker, probably pick up a couple K. Slip up all the pushers and hustlers. They gotta fill us off a push up, off a set up. Body work, then we cut up. You get the picture, street and corporate, then turn the tables and then we mix it. Hit the booth, make a hit, stretch it out, then remix it. Hustling, try not to let the devil in. Cause if I end out in these streets, then I'ma sell again. Tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend, that if I end out in these streets, then I'ma sell again. Hustling, try not to let the devil in. If I end out in these streets, then I'ma sell again. Tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend, that if I end out in these streets, dollar after dollar after dollar after dollar. Oh man, that's all I know from my hood. I'm a product, got here, begin, a gentleman and a scholar. No need wait, relocate, moving up the ranks. Shabba, this here for the times in the winter that we almost froze. Warmed up the crib with a stove, so you know the water ain't hot. Put it in a microwave if it get too cold. Can't go back cause I'm getting too old. Halfway in, all the way out, but I bet still grind like I always been known. Look, care, player, player, hustling. Try not to let the devil in. Cause if I end out in these streets, then I'ma sell again. Hey, tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend, that if I end out in these streets, then I'ma sell again. Hey, hustling, try not to let the devil in. Hey, if I end out in these streets, then I'ma sell again. Hey, tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend, that if I end out in these streets, then I'ma, hey, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, The Boy Illinois in studio. Illy here on Studio 435. That track, I'll Sell Again. Of course, the mixtape is out. It's called Windy. I did go through the whole list of things that have happened to you in the last year, including the distribution deal with Priority Records, which we'll talk about. Illy, The Boy Illinois here in studio. Yeah, I mean, Forbes said, I mean, you are the next big thing to come out of Chicago. Mention the other things that have come out of Chicago, whether it be Chance, Common, Lupe Fiasco. When you hear songs like this and you're talking about Chicago and you're talking about your experience growing up in Chicago, I mean, is it safe to say that all your music is inspired from where you come?
pretty much, you know, I spent a little time on the road, but not as much as I spent here in Chicago. So, and especially growing up here, it's such a unique experience that you would like love to share about the world. And then as I travel, everybody is like, what's Chicago like? Yeah. You know, like you get that everywhere more than any other city.
What do you think it is about your music, your career, everything? When Forbes comes out and says, hey, the next big thing is going to follow in the footsteps of these. What is it about your music, your personality, who you are, that makes them say that? What is it about the Illy, the boy Illinois, that is the next thing to come out of Chicago?
Oh, for one, I'm good. I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good at what I do. Right. I've been.
You are.
You know, so that's the number one. And from there, I'm just a very charismatic, very personable person. Like, I'm a people person. So that's even better. Because on tour, after every show, no matter if I had fans there or had not, I would go, after I get off the stage, I'm walking through the crowd talking to everybody. Like, yo, what's up? Letting people touch me. This is a different type of thing. Especially in this day and age with social media, you want that veil to kind of be broken, to have that personal connection with the people. And when you have that, it's just, you know,
a lot of artists, especially in hip-hop, are not like that. You know, you're going to get there to be on stage, and they're going to get off stage, and they're going to rope it off when they need to be roped off. They want to be approached. So what is it about you that changed different?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the upbringing too. My pops, my mom and pop, shout out to them. I'm just a person, a people's person, man. I don't know what it is. And I come from a large family. My grandmother and my mother's side had 12 kids. Wow. So I was raised by 9 women. I had 9 aunties. So, yeah.
So I asked that question about discipline, and I'll roll it into the question about family as well, because it sounds like you've had a family is a big part of your life. But
definitely.
But talk about those things that are in our upbringings. When you talk about the Catholic school and discipline, and at the same time you talk about your professionalism, being on stage and how you stand out at places like South by Southwest because of your experience and your professionalism. Does it come from those? Can you draw a direct correlation or a direct line to your upbringing in Catholic school and even to your family?
Yeah, definitely upbringing in a family, because my mama would go in on me if I didn't conduct myself a certain way, especially being a young man. And I'm her only child too, so it's a certain way she went about raising me. You know, she didn't have no practice beforehand, so she made sure she was kind of like, I was kind of a mama's boy basically growing up. So I had manners. I was very mannerable to women, you know, open the door for them and everything like that. So when you're operating, especially in the industry, it's a lot of women in power, and you're a gentleman, and you're a genuine gentleman, that definitely takes you a long way. And then on the flip side of it, on the Catholic school, I went from, you know, just going to pretty much predominantly black African-American schools to now it's only like 12% of us in here, even though it's in the hood. Like I said, it's in a black community, but majority of my people don't look like me here. So you get to figure out, like, oh, it's a different type of culture when you come from. I went to Catholic school, so you had to pay tuition. But I played basketball, so a lot of that was taken care of because of basketball. Mm. But you come from these people's families that was like $5,000, $5K, that's nothing, we can pay that. And you'd be like, what y'all family do? Like, what do y'all do for free time? What do y'all do for fun? It's a different culture.
You also are exposed to different cultures.
Different. Told him so many. So you exposed to a lot of people who are like kids. Their pops is a hedge fund manager. And you're like, what is that? You know, like, I don't know nothing too much about that. And you learn the business side, especially when to delve into the music industry, is a majority business. So when you want to connect with brands, when you want to connect with different type of corporate entities, it's good to have that Catholic or that kind of like corporate kid upbringing. Because when you get older, you'll be like, oh, yeah, remember we used to go to school together. Oh, that's my boy. Hey, Pops, could you hook him? Let's get it. You know what I'm saying? So I'm with it, you know, but very unique experience.
Yeah. Illy, the boy, Illinois, in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news with Rob, and then we'll come back and we'll get some more live music with Illy, the boy, Illinois, in studio. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's the Download 720 WGN and Studio 435, our Monday night segment featuring the best live performance Chicago has to offer tonight, no exception. The Chicago hip-hop artist, the boy, Illinois, in studio, Illy, just had a distribution deal signed with Priority Records, put out a new mixtape called Windy, just got back from South by Southwest, and Forbes magazine just put out an amazing piece with him, calling him the next big thing to come out of Chicago, and he is here at WGN Radio tonight. And he's ready for another live performance. Here's the track, Dancing Like Diddy. Here's Illy, the boy, Illinois. Take it away.
all my crystals on me. I am like ha, hematite, ha, tigers out, ha, smoking quartz, ha. La, 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 I come alive in the nighttime, especially when I light lime. Make sure it's lemon in my water. I'm just trying to dance with the stars. Ha, rain dance in my parka. Go and shake it up with my partners. Ha, rain dance like I'm Louis U. Jackson, we just trying to get a W2. Take practices and flip mattresses. We just trying to get a ram running the move. No passengers, we get actresses. I did it all while running with wolves. I'm still dancing like D-Lo. I tell her keep it right there. You should have seen me on Vivo. I was little moving with my people. Lenny Lopes and a Pico. Still grooting like James Brown. On my way to the scene, then I go and hit my own dance. Go crazy like CeeLo. Make a couple B's with my own hands. Ha, that's a Millie to a Billy. If you don't know, everybody call me Illy. Ha, tell my mama that I did it. I did it. And they all with it. Ha, ha, running through the city. I be dancing like Diddy. Ha, ha. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. Left foot, left stump. Right foot, left stump. You done had what you need. Trying to give you what you want. And that's the best in line. I know that she'll never testify. Paying up when that rent due. But I may let the electric slide. Stepping in the name of love. Pulling up like I need exercise. And I probably do. So I'm pulling up. And you know my groove. I'm trying to dance with you. You ask me questions, boo. I dance around that too. So yeah, yeah, yeah. I did it. Ha, ha, and they all with it. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I said, go and let a player dance. Take that, yeah. I said, go and let a player dance.
Take that,
yeah. I said, go and let a player dance. Yeah. I said, go and let a player dance. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go, in studio 435 tonight. Yes, Illy, the boy, Illinois, in studio. This is great, man. The Dancing Like Diddy, the track, which is, we were talking about that. It's so great to hear the classics. The mixtape's called Windy. It's out. Just got back from South by Southwest. Forbes magazine calls him the next big thing to come out of Chicago, and more to come. Illy, in studio tonight. Thinking about that, there's so much that's happening in your career right now.
There's a lot.
And, you know, from the Priority Records announcement, which came up, I think it was the summertime.
Yeah.
And just being in South by Southwest and getting on five different showcases, which if you know South by Southwest and you know music, you know that that's a lot of showcases to
that's
get
a lot.
At a festival. How do you keep it all organized? Meaning you know what you want out of your career. But you've got a lot of opportunities flowing at you right now. And some might be right, some might be wrong, but there's a lot that's happening. How do you keep it straight?
Man, you got to have a good team around you. So that's number one. People who's kind of been in it, seen different things that you haven't seen, so they can help, aid, and assist when the time is being, you know what I'm saying, and when they need to. And also, just I've been doing this for a while, so I've seen a lot of stuff that went wrong, and I know the reason why it went wrong. So I've learned a lot of what not to do.
Well, I mean, I will have conversations on the show with business leaders. We just had the new head person at 1871, mm-hmm. and they'll always talk about failure and learning from your mistakes. That's part of
a
business.
Lot of mistakes.
And you've made a lot of conversation about business, and yeah. Music is business. So you do need to learn from mistakes that you make in your career.
A lot. And don't be afraid to be wrong. A lot of people be afraid to be wrong and still try to find themselves right when they're wrong. Like, no, you learn from being wrong. And when you're wrong, you open up yourself up to receive the information to be right the next time. Mm-hmm. So I've always been an open person. and been open to a lot of people who've seen things. They might be like, oh, they got this and that to say about this person, but they have a certain experience. So you pick and choose exactly what you want to extract from that situation, right, or that person, and go from there. And I've learned to do that quite well. And I pay attention to detail. So
you, when we talk about, you know, you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
When you start working on new projects, and whether it be the EP or the mixtape or what it might be, are you constantly pushing yourself to try new things, or are you more of the kind of artist that says, I'm going to get it perfect this time? This is, I've made the sound of the Boy Illinois Illy work, and I'm going to manufacture that.
Well, I just found my sound. I think Gaines helped me find it on Sell Again. From Sell Again on, it's kind of that raspy, jazzy, harmony type of melodic flow. And so I'm just finding it. So the point I'm at right now is experimentation, definitely, because I want to see how far I can go. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been, shout out to my homie Jay Bravo. He came through the crib earlier playing like top 40 stuff that can go well, that I would like to do, because I also songwrite. So I've written before for people and there'd be songs that probably you wouldn't expect me to have written. But so I love to push the envelope and then being an artist. It's a song on my project called Wendy. What's my first kind of R&B song called Run Around.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, and that is that's a 4-year-old song.
Okay.
That just finally just mustered up. It's like, let me just put this out myself.
Well, it has the feel, and it flows with Wendy.
Yeah.
But it's an entirely different song. It's not something I've heard you do before.
No, it's not. It's something that I'll do just to, on some writing thing, on the writing tip, but it's not, it's nothing I'll put out myself. And when I put it out and I got a great response, and then all the ladies is like, yeah, that's my favorite song. I'm like, I got to come out with a new project. So
I always love when artists, especially hip hop artists, can push the envelope and find themselves outside of their comfort zone. I think Kanye West does that in the most.
He does it a lot.
He is just amazing in the way that you will say, okay, you think you know everything you know about Kanye West, and the next track he's singing.
He pushes the envelope for us, the up and comers, because you know.
So do you think the same way about it? I mean, do you have tricks and talents that you hold on to and then you and maybe explore or get later in a mixtape or later on a track?
Probably even, like I was saying earlier, I dance a lot, and that's something I really haven't like put out publicly, but You might catch me one or two times, or I might have a nice routine set up on the next tour, or a dance routine to go with a song that just might bust out. And that's not something that you normally see from a hip hop artist. What I'm saying?
Right.
So that's one too. And my dad has been telling me to do that for like 12 years. Like, you need a routine, man. You need a couple dances up there. Y'all do a step. I'm telling you, cause he from the Motown days, and when it was groups and they had their moves down and everything. So it was just like, that's what you need. You need to do a show, it need to be like this. So I'm slowly but surely headed in that direction.
It is intriguing because a lot of hip-hop shows are truly about raw energy,
and
the way you get up there, and even the performers are aimlessly walking around the stage. Maybe there's four or five guys up there, and they're making great music, and they're making a sound, and but the actual presentation on the stage,
it's all about the presentation. And that was that's the next step up for me, is I got down the performance aspect. Now it's adding all the subtle nuances onto it that make everything look pristine. And oh, this is amazing. Like, oh, he got this on his set. He got that going on. He got somebody shooting confetti. Like, all type of different things. You know,
just cannons, man.
That, you know, just to make it more interesting. Yeah. You know, so yeah.
There you go. Illy, the Boy Illinois, in studio 435 tonight. All right, so here's what we'll do. We'll take our last break. We'll come back. We'll get one more song from the Boy Illinois. Illy in studio here in 720 WGN. Stay with us. Studio 435 tonight. The Boy Illinois. Illy in studio tonight. He's got his new, I guess it's somewhat still new.
It's still new. It's still new.
When is it? What's the time frame? When is it not new anymore?
Once a million people hear it. That's when it's not. That's what I've been told. If a million people ain't heard it's still new. It's still new.
Illy just got back from South by Southwest. Forbes called him the next big thing to come out of Chicago. The hip-hop artist is here in Studio 435 tonight. What do we got coming up? I mean, we didn't have much time to talk about the Priority Records thing. It's a distribution deal.
Just distro, you know, they the middleman. And then we can explore other options after this anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like get the foot in the door type of thing.
It's also an unbelievable name to have attached.
Exactly. Exactly. So it looks right. It looks even better. It's like priority. Like, oh, word. Yeah. It's a very legendary label. So
yeah. So what's next for you? What do you do at this point? You just start fielding offers? Do you start working on new music? What's the next
thing? Yeah, man, you know, just, you know, this being this free agent type of guy that's hot right now, you know. I can start a bidding war soon if I want to. But it's just all about looking for the right opportunity, the right deal that fits the brand.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what's next.
And how important is that for you to try and keep that independent vibe?
It's very important for me because I built this for almost 8-9 years, by, you know, in this type of vein. So it's kind of, I kind of want to stay like this. It's a lot of freedom, mm-hmm. personal and musical freedom to do what I want and to, you know, branch off and try X, Y, and Z if I want to. So it's very important for me.
Well,
like, I'd rather nothing else than to be like this.
Yeah, I was going to say, we look forward to seeing you in the iHeart Music Festival in Las Vegas.
Definitely.
On AMC or TBS.
Throw that in there.
Mr. Independent over here.
Yep. Yeah, you better. I'm still going to be indie. You feel me?
The Boy Illinois, Illy, in studio tonight. All right, so you got one more song.
Yeah,
what are we going to hear?
Produced by my brother Sounds by Coop. This is a song called 100. It's the last song. It's the outro, I guess, kind of on Windy.
All right, here it is. The outro song from Windy, 100. And this is The Boy Illinois, Illy, on Studio 435. Take it away.
This how we end it. This how we end it. Yeah. Yeah.
Doing big things when I.
Doing big things when I.
When I.
Yeah.
When I.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I bring when I come around. Doing big things when I run it now. I may need change for it. I can never change for it. I may need change for 100 now. You know what I bring when I come around. Doing big things when I run it now. I may need change for it. I can never change for it. I may need change for 100.
Back when I had 20s, and a player made it past 25. And I scooped up when she was 22. Woo! She gon' be a beast by 25.
Swear.
Take it all in, break it into quarters.
Hi.
Every 15 worth 25.
Hi.
Say a hard hand, make her soft. She gon' tell me like 20 times.
Love.
And they always do a player Ben G. On my jersey, still 25. When it's running time, we don't run it high.
Nah.
We done this like 100 times. For the 100th time, I know when you run with from the 100 line. Devin Hester when I'm touching down. Let it rain when it's coming down. So I may need change for it. I can never change for 100 now. Know what I bring when I come around. Doing big things when I run it now. I may need change for it. I can never change for it. I may need change for 100 now. Know what I bring when I come around. Doing big things when I run it now. I may need change for it. I can never change for it.
I was supposed to be here 9, pulled up like 10-10, I'ma probably need 10-10, I mean right off of Vincennes, you ain't even got a pretend, we can act like it's real, baby tell me how you feel, cause I can never change for it, I'll never change for it, and I got the game for it, and I got the game for it, then I got the lane for it, and I got the flame for it, and I got some change for it, trying to hit a lick, what I got a stain for, if they go against us, you know what the aim for, you know what I came for, ride or die, you know what the game for, taking what the game for, trying to get pleasure, well that's what to pay for, I never change for 100, she gon' make it safe for
100,
she gon' make it safe for 100, now,
100,
she gon' make it safe for
100,
she gon' make it safe for
100,
she gon' make it safe for 100, now,
100,
now I'm in the club with 101, with all my dogs like 101, and I got 99 problems, don't go ahead and beat 101, I'ma need change for 100, 100, 100, 100, now, doing big things when I run it, run it, run it, run it, now, you know what I bring when I, 100, 100, 100, doing big things when I, 100, 100, 100, so I'ma need change for 100, 100.
now. Doing big things when I, big things when I, big things when I mean need change for. I can never change for. Honey. Whoa. Never that. So God. Same. Yeah.
Yes. Wow. That's amazing. The Boy Illinois, Illy, in studio 435 tonight. The mixtape's called Windy. Of course, you can find him at all. Just find The Boy Illinois. He's everywhere. Of course, Forbes magazine called him the next big thing to come out of Chicago, and there's more to come. Illy, great to see you.
Great
to have you back, and great performance.
Oh, thank you, man. I loved it, especially the people outside the window.
Yeah,
it
right?
was jamming.
And I have to say, I look forward to what's coming next with you.
Oh, very good thing. And also, July 14th, Taste of Chicago. I'll be on stage.
All right.
So come and check me out, Chicago.
All right, good to see you, man.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's going to do it for the download tonight. We will be back tomorrow at WGNRadio.com opposite the Blackhawks. We will be doing our live election and analysis returns here on WGNRadio.com and through the WGN app. Join us for all that starting at 7 o'clock. Patty Vasquez up next with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Hi, Patty.
Hey, I'll be at some of the parties, the primary parties as well, too, for a couple of reps and governor races as well. So.
Yeah, awesome.
So maybe I'll call in.
I was going to say, yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have you. What's on the show tonight?
We have, it's Motivational Monday with Jen Zanotti. She's our jiu-jitsu expert, and also she does a lot of great work with people to help them find what's right for them to keep them motivated in life and the things they want to achieve.
I love it.
And then Paul Farvar, we're going to play White House Apprentice and see who's, take bets on who's next.
Okay.
And then, we have our friends from Giant Steps. They're partnering with Second City for some great programs for children who have autism. So we're excited about that as well. So have a great
night. Fantastic. Have a great show.